this is the most important raft. It comes down to making out. Whenever possible, put on side one of...
Rock All Over You Podcast! Let's rock! Eric and Edwin. Edwin and Eric, they don't give a fuck. They just want you to rock. Yeah. Bam, 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 dilly dee. Bam, bam, bam!
Hey everybody, welcome to the Rock All Over You Podcast. I'm Eric Jordan, RMCP, and tonight's a special night. We're burning like a flame on a Christmas fire. We're ready to unchain the silent night, because for Christmas, we're going to be docking around the Christmas tree with our top 10 docking songs. And I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Eddie Canastracci!
Hey! I liked how you said my name. You're getting better and better.
Yeah,
it's awesome, man. I don't know about you. I have an idea, though, that we were doing the same thing. Before this episode, I've been listening to Dokken nonstop. Not only was I listening to this list that we're going to be doing, but I threw in a few extra songs as well. So, and I've been listening to Dokken, I've been on big Dokken kick for the past couple of weeks because of the new album. Obviously, Heaven Comes Down. Check out my YouTube video if you haven't seen that yet. I did not actually do that video. Freddy Krueger came in and was my guest host, and Freddy Krueger did that video, and he did a great job.
It's amazing. It's
weird too, because me and Freddy think the same fucking thing about that album. It's a little weird how that happened, but that worked out good. So yeah, if you're curious what I think, just watch that YouTube video, because what Freddie says is exactly what I fucking think about that album. And obviously, you know, I get into a docking kick, like, periodically in my life, like, every couple months. Because they're one of my favorite bands. Yeah, everyone, it's cool. And so this is not, like, an unusual thing for me, but it just happens that, yes, I'm having a docking kick, and... You and I were talking, and I think it was like last week or something, and we were just, I suggested we were going to just review Under Lock and Key, because we haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted Ryan T. Russell, and Johnny Vogan to do that episode with us. Because when I was thinking of talking, I thought we needed to have two legendary members of the RMCP Army with us. And that is why they are here. But before they talk, I just want to say one thing. Ryan Russell had the idea. He said, nah, fuck that shit. Let's not do an album review. Let's go Full Tilt Top 20 Dokken songs. And we have done this before. Ryan does this thing, which he'll explain to you all with his mathematics, his rock and roll mathematics, where we all create a list, and then he figures it out. And we, as a result, there's a group list. We did this back when we were, me, Ryan, and Johnny were part of the Scab RMCP, that's what I call it, the Scab RMCP. There was a brief period where Ralph wasn't on the show, where Ian was having guest hosts, and we did a couple episodes, one of which was a countdown like this, the top 20 Van Halen songs. And check that out. I don't know if like Ralph kept those episodes up or not, but if they're up still, check it out. It's a great episode. And also, we did the Motley Crue, the top 20 Motley Crue songs, which ended up being the reunion, the Rock and Metal Combat Podcast reunion with Ralph and Ian.
You know what surprised me more about that episode, rather than the fact that, oh my god, Ralph and Ian are back together, it was the fact that, wow, they found 20 good Motley Crue songs?
It was tough by...
Oh, God.
By the time you got to 23 or 24, because each part, and Ryan will explain this more to you guys, but we each create a top 25 list. And then from that top 25 list, he breaks it down, he gets it down to a top 20 list. For the Motley Crue list, I was fine for the top 20. You know, I love the first two albums, and I like Theater of Pain, so it wasn't hard for me to come up with like 20 songs. By the time I was getting to like 23 and 24, I was like, I guess this song doesn't suck. And I'll just say, that's not the case with Dokken. Dokken was closer to like Van Halen.
Dokken was tough, man. It was tough.
Yeah, I was still like, I'm still loving songs by 25, and I was thinking of songs, other songs I loved that weren't making the list. So it's like, yeah, Doc, in my opinion, in terms of quality, and they only had a couple albums in the 80s during the classic era. And they were like Thin Lizzy and... they were more like Thin Lizzy and Van Halen than they were like Motley Crue. It was really tough to do a top 20, but we did it. But anyway, before we get to Ryan, let's talk to the man himself, the legend, Johnny Vogan. Hey!
Hey!
What's up, Johnny?
Oh, fuck, Johnny died again.
It's Johnny Vogan.
Where the fuck is Johnny?
Oh, no. All right, we might edit that part out. Okay, yeah. Let's act like I Let said. And now, oh wait, there he is.
Oh, he's God damn it! Where's Johnny going?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now
I can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay,
yeah,
it's all
right. I'm here now. You never know when I may fade into the shadows, but hopefully I'm here for the long haul. And always excited to be here with you guys. The RMCP lists we did were a lot of fun, so I'm really looking forward to this one. Huge Dokken fan, so let's do it.
Yeah, well said, Johnny. Well said, Johnny. Okay, Ryan. Hey, Mr. Russell, what's up?
What's up, fellas? Great to be back. It's been a minute, but when me and Johnny got the call, I don't think either one of us hesitated for a second. And by the way, it was Johnny's idea to come up with the top 20. Once he said it, I was like, "Yeah, I'm in."
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. That's because you know, unlike us, you paid attention in math class. And you have like this big brain that can like process all this shit where like we each give you a top 25 and you're able to like construct this list, you know. I couldn't do that shit. My brain would have an aneurysm. I'd fucking die. And Ed would need to find a new co-host.
Yeah, Ryan, do you use AI to create this list?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Everybody gives me their top 25 and I add up like just where each person had it ranked. And the lowest score is the best score.
Oh, shit, Ryan, you gotta stop talking. My brain's hurting. Oh, fuck.
So if one song had a bunch of people rank at number, 4, 5, and 5, 14 would be a pretty good score, and it'd be pretty high on the list. Whereas if three people, another song, all three people had it ranked at 25, gets a total of 75, it's going to be way back. So,
oh, God, blood vessel just burst.
Pretty simple.
It's like a beautiful mind, where you saw like the fucking equations like in front of his face.
For
superimposed.
Real. That's what I picture Ryan T. Russell doing every time he makes these damn lists.
But hey, when it's all said and done, it comes out in the wash. It's usually a pretty damn good list.
Yeah, I don't want to reveal anything about this list. People are going to listen to find out. All I can say is it seemed scientific. There's maybe one oddball curveball that is because it's the four of us that maybe other people wouldn't think. There was essentially only two songs. One song was a curveball that I thought, yeah, that makes sense with the four of us. So it wasn't weird to us, but it might be to other people. And then there was one song that did surprise me. But for the most part, most of it made sense to me. I looked at this, Ryan, and went, fucking science. I'm not going to deny this science. It's a damn good list. That's all.
Yeah, and without, giving anything away of the list, and we talked about this once, we came up with the final list, is it's a great representation. It's spread out throughout the albums. There's a good, and, Edwin said it, there's a good mixture of kind of hits and then deeper tracks. So it's a very representative list of, I think, hardcore Dokken fans are going to agree with a lot of this list.
Yeah, I agree. And so, Ryan, what's your history with the band Dokken?
I'll try to keep this brief, but Dokken, at one point in my life, for a good probably three, almost 4 years, was, I could maybe even say my favorite band. They were right up there at that, like, kind of 85 to 88, from when I first, I got Tooth and Nail in probably like early 84, and then bought everything new from there, but they were just like, Lynch was my, after Eddie started to fade with the new version of Van Halen, Lynch became my favorite guitarist in the world. Me and my buddies in high school had, I don't know, everybody has this, but a lot of senior yearbooks have like what they call senior chain, where you just write like little quotes and bands or whatever. And me and three of my buddies all had Lynch's God in our senior chain. I mean, we were like Dokken heads. We were like huge Dokken fans at that time. Now, over the years, my fandom has definitely waned, and I didn't really keep up with the Don kind of solo Dokken years. I know some of it, and some of it's decent, but you know, my Dokken fandom is in those first four albums for the most part, and the live album. And you'll see that with my rankings of everything. But they were also, they played in a little bigger role. They were a very big turning point those years, 84 and 85, for me personally, because prior to that, other than like Kiss and Van Halen, the stuff I listened to really was not like hard rock or metal. It was more like pop rock. I was listening to, you know, like the Cars and Journey and the Police and, you know, stuff like that. REO Speedwagon, Styx. And, you know, again, I'm like 10, 11 years old at that point. But then I got out of the cellar and Shout at the Devil and Tooth and Nail and also Pyromania, right, in that like 1 year gap there. And that was what turned me completely to be like a metalhead for like pretty much.
Yeah, that'll do it.
that's like the big four of like hair metal albums, man, like 80s metal albums.
Yeah,
I agree.
And it was like they were, I was literally buying one of them like every couple months. The first one I got was Pyromania. Then I got Shout at the Devil. Then I got Out of the Cellar. And Tooth and Nail was the last one I got. But I mean, it just turned my music universe. Like everything from that point forward for a good decade was nothing but metal.
Yeah, that's they're like perfect transition albums too, because yeah, they're poppier and have hooks and melodies, but yet they have the metal.
Yeah, exactly. Those are good gateway albums, man. Like to get into metal, you know.
Yeah, and the timing was kind of perfect because it was just as Van Halen was losing Dave, Kiss was kind of getting lame at that time, and a lot of the pop bands that I was talking about. Like I still love Journey, but when they got to like those mid 80s, I didn't like them anymore, and I didn't like Styx anymore, and I didn't like REO Speedwagon anymore. They were cheesy at that point. Even like Rush, who I liked in the early 80s, they were doing stuff I didn't like as much. Billy Squire,
that keyboard stuff.
Billy Squire, who I loved, put out the worst album of his career, Enough is Enough, right around that time. So it was a perfect time for like another genre to like catch me and like grab me, and those four albums did it.
I get that. I was a little like that with Thrash a couple years later. Like it was like by the time you got to like 89 and 90, a lot of the hair metal stuff had gotten so soft and poppy by that point.
Yeah,
that I wanted something different.
You want something dangerous? You want something that was dangerous again and like dirty and bad and badass? You know,
exactly. And that's like when I got into Metallica and stuff at that period. So I'm excited. So that was kind of like what you're saying, that at that point in the mid-80s was kind of like what was happening with me in the late 80s. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I was, for 3-4 years there, Dokken was huge for me. They were right up there with my top bands. Saw them, you know, 2-3 times during that time period. But yeah, so very excited to do this. When you asked, I was like, oh, that's great that they're doing Dokken.
Awesome, awesome. And Johnny, you don't have to go too much into your history with it, but this was your idea. Sorry, I forgot that. But Mr. Rogan, what was your first Dokken album? What got you into the band?
So, interestingly enough, like I have a little bit different take. Is I discovered Dokken around Back for the Attack era, Back for the Attack, Dream Warriors video. I was about 7 or 8 in that period, 87, 88, and I wasn't a huge fan of Dokken back then, liked Dokken, but I became a much bigger fan later on, more, you know, when I started to get into vinyl and really listen, because I very much discovered music around that time with the video. And that's one area where I thought, and it's kind of like the million-dollar question, why didn't they really cross over? And some of the songs we're going to talk about have such a pop sensibility and are so great, but yet they never made that crossover like Bon Jovi and Motley Crue. And I think part of the reason is the videos. But so I became a fan much later on, but was a fan when I was younger. I mean, MTV was the babysitter, and you know, that's how you discovered all these bands back then, but have since become a huge Dokken fan. And those, the first albums, Breaking the Chains not so much, but Tooth and Nail up through Beast are you know, albums I listen to frequently still to this day.
Yeah, I know. Johnny and me both like to post pictures of us drinking beer to Dokken records that we're spinning. yeah, you know, it's funny because obviously as we go song by song, and a few of these songs I'm sure we're already thinking of, there's always going to be the conversation with Dokken. I think ultimately it leads to a conversation of why weren't they bigger?
Yeah.
Why weren't
they... They never got to be like a headliner, really. I mean, they were big, like, you know, in the sense of they're one of the bigger of the hair metal bands, but, like, they never made it to that point where they're, like, headlining.
I think it's a question, though, because, like, not every band that doesn't make it has that question that, like, haunts them. With Dokken, I think it's just because of the obvious quality of some of these songs.
I know.
and the pop sensibility, like Johnny said, that you just have to kind of wonder, because there are some songs on this list that we're talking about that if, like, say, Def Leppard did, you knew would be a hit, like a top 40, like, Billboard hit, not just, like, a hit on the rock charts. And there, I do think the videos were a big thing. I do discuss this. I have a YouTube video I did a couple years ago about Dokken. It was a long one. One of my first long videos, like 2 hours long. And I had my theories, and we'll discuss these theories. But I think it's a combination of the... I think it's a combination of three things. I think it was the videos weren't that great. I think they didn't really have a distinct image the way that some of the other bigger bands did. And the third thing is I think they didn't always pick the best singles or release them in the right order. And
interesting.
There are things that will come up when we talk about it. But I think they made several career mistakes at key moments.
For me, too, I also think, like, and no offense to Don Dokken, because I love Don Dokken. I'm actually, you know, everyone's always Team Lynch. I'm more Team Don Dokken, you know. I honestly think George Lynch is a fucking asshole. And, you know, I think, like, without Don, George kind of, like, really isn't that great on his own, you know, except for a couple things here and there. But, you know, mainly Michael Sweet kind of helps him out when on the albums I like they did without Don Dokken, but... I've always been Team Don, but I, you know, and so this is no offense to him, but I always feel like Don was never really, like, you know, the typical pretty boy front man, you know. I think I don't think, like, chicks were really, like, that into his image, you know, and whatnot. I just don't think he was a stereotypical kind of pretty boy front man, like, you know, like a Vince Neil or a Steven Piercy, you know. So I think that was another thing that hurt them, you know, and, like, and it's his band, basically, because it's, like, it's Dokken, you know, so...
I do think that's an element of it. Although they could have, like, George Lynch and Jeff Pilson were good-looking guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But when your front man is not, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's your front man's got to be a pretty boy. Don wasn't really, like, a pretty boy.
I think he's a handsome guy, though. He's a handsome guy, but he doesn't have a lot of personality.
It's more like charisma. I think Johnny's hitting it. I think Don's, like, the type of guy. It's like what I said about, I would say about Tom Atkins, although more rugged. But what I'm saying is,
I feel men find Don attractive than, like, actual women. I always hear guys who are hair metal fans like, oh man, Don Dokken, what? No homo, but he's a sexy dude. I wish I could look like him, but never hear females talk about him that.
Let me make the Tom Atkins analogy. Okay. The Tom Atkins analogy. Okay, he ain't like Kurt Russell, you know what I mean? He's not like a really handsome, traditionally handsome guy. Like, Kurt Russell would walk into a room and women would just want to fuck him just because of the way he looked.
Yeah.
But Tom Atkins is a guy who acts, he's got to be cool. He's got to have, like, a way about him. He's got to say the right thing at the right time. He's got to just have a cool vibe to him. And then suddenly women might want to fuck him, you know? Don is that level of looks. Like, he's not as good looking as some of the top guys, but it's not like he's hideous looking. He's like a decent looking guy when he was younger. It's just like he just didn't have that charisma and swagger that some of these guys, I picture if Don Dokken was a real bad boy and just had a lot of charisma and swagger, he would have, his looks would have been fine. I mean, look at fucking Mick Jagger.
You know,
swagger in the cover of Lock and Key. That picture, I mean, if he just had that swagger all the time, he's got the swag there.
Yeah, it's more his personality. I agree with Johnny. Like, you know that picture of him where he's, like, with the two girls by the car? He just looks awkward.
Like, he does, yeah. He always had, like, this awkward look about him, you know?
Yeah, it's more just he was an uncomfortable rock star. In fact, I think it would have been better if he kept playing rhythm guitar, and that was George Lynch that pushed him away from that. If you watch early clips of when they were like performing in Germany, I feel like he was more naturally that kind of guy, more of a foreshadowing of what would happen in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
If he was just more of an earnest guy with a guitar, I feel that's who Don really was. But when suddenly George Lynch is like, you got to be the front man like these other bands.
No, George is just fucking jealous. George is kind of a fucking asshole. I love him. He's a scary guitarist, but he's a fucking asshole.
Hey, listen, I agree with you here. I'm a little more on Team Don, too. Although I do think the best stuff he did was with George. I think it was a team effort, and Jeff Pilson was actually a really great songwriter.
Jeff is actually my favorite member of Dokken.
Oh, you know what?
He's one of my top five favorite bass players, too.
He's the guy. Listen, there would be no Dokken without Jeff Pilson.
He held that shit together.
He held that shit together. Because even by tooth and nail, George and Don could not record together.
Yeah, they shocked when hate I found, each other, yeah.
I was shocked to find out it was that early. That early, they couldn't record together.
Even that fucking home video that my dad used to have, that home video on VHS, Unchained the Night, the videos. The segments are, like, separated. It's Jeff and George and then Mick and Don. Like, they're not all together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and Mick didn't like Don either, though.
Mick just was never paying him.
They just told him to go there. But, no, it was Jeff. Jeff was the diplomatic guy. He was a very talented guy. He held that band together. And he was a great backing vocalist and a great songwriter. And Don was a great songwriter, too, though. So that's what made classic Dokken classic Dokken. You have Don and Jeff writing songs. You have George with the riffage, you know, bringing in all those guitar riffs. You know, it's image, attitude, videos, and in some cases, I think, choices of singles that really held them back. Because they had everything. They had like the biggest management company they could have had. They had Metallica and Def Leppard's management.
Oh, yeah. Just to elaborate on the George versus Don thing, I also feel like when you look at like solo, like when George and Don were separate from each other and doing their own thing, I like the stuff Don did. You know, like there's a lot of good stuff on those Dokken albums without George. And then at the same time, too, I love that solo Don Dokken album.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the stuff Lynch did, except for, like, Sweet and Lynch. But, I mean, a lot of that's attributed to having a great guy like Michael Sweet with him helping. Because I'm not a big fan of Lynch Mob.
I think Up From the Ashes destroys anything Lynch Mob ever did.
Oh,
it absolutely does. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Johnny, would you say you're on Team Don or Team George if you had to pick?
Musically. Up From the Ashes, I put right up there with... There's been nothing better since then.
I agree. But
part of that, I would say, is due to... what's his name from Europe who played on that? It was fantastic. The guitar on that is unbelievable.
John Norum.
Unbelievable.
Mickey D from Motorhead, Merciful Fate, and then also Peter Baltz from Accept.
Yeah, it was a great lineup. Yeah. You know, he wanted to call that Dokken, but they sued him for it. So
as far as whose fault it is, I think Don's the bigger asshole of the two assholes.
Oh, he was an asshole at one point, but at least he kind of owns up to it now. He's like, yeah, I was a fucking dick back in the day, but he's like. He's reformed and trying to be better, whereas George has just still always been an asshole, and he's just still so fucking bitter.
They both are very unlikable.
They both have issues, let's just say that. Yeah, I think Don and George both have their issues, but unfortunately they hate each other, but they made the best music when they were together. Ryan, where are you in the whole Team Don versus Team George debate before we get into this
list? Yeah, we haven't even touched the list yet, and... I'm ready to battle. I am 100% Team Lynch.
Now after Dokken, keep in mind, we're talking about after, like, Unleash from the East, you know? Beast from the East, sorry. Got my East Live Metal albums confused. Mm-hmm. Unlike after Beast from the East, do you think George's output without Don is better than Don's output without George?
For starters, I don't really love either one of their outputs since Dokken ended. Love the first Lynch Mob album. Like, love, love, love. Like, I still to this day love that album. And it's better than anything Don's, for me, better than anything Don has done since Dokken broke up. But I, honestly, beyond that, I don't love any Lynch stuff. I like some, like there's a song here and there, like there's a, I don't really remember the name of it, but one of the Sweet Lynch songs I really like, one of the, there was a single for it, there was a video. And then there was one from this, I mean, God, you lose track because George does so many projects, it's insane. I actually like counted it up a couple years ago where he had done like 14 albums in like 6.5 years or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's part of the problem. He stretches himself out. He does.
Yeah, he does. Like, yeah.
Much. I mean, I can't even keep up with it. And honestly, I don't. I haven't even listened to half of it.
Yeah, I think George also. He's more trendy. He jumps on a lot of trends.
You know,
he
did, album.
Oh, he did a horrible rap. Like shit. Like Don just would never do. In my opinion, Don stayed more true to the sound of the music.
Yeah, I mean, and George is almost like Tommy Lee in a sense. Like he just wants to stay young and stay hip.
Yeah, he's given that up a little bit in recent years, but there was a period where George was really trying to be
very short period, though.
Yeah,
it's not like he's done a lot of that. Most of what he's done is, you know, at least close to what he's always done.
I mean, to me, there's Up from the Ashes, there's Erase the Slate, those two.
I really liked Lightning Strikes Again too.
It's that a good album.
That was like very underrated.
Yeah, you know, of course, Dysfunctional, I think, is great. And I really love the new album. So I think Don's, you know, I don't know. But it's good that Ryan's bringing in, because it sounds like the three of us are all kind of more Team Don, and Ryan is Team George. But that's good that we've got, you know, a different point of view here.
Yeah, and just to finish off on, like, where I am with the George and Don thing, like, most of it, 90% of it, comes from the fact that I just think, and you'll hear this in the way I break down all these songs when we're doing them, that George had a lot more to do with what I loved about Dokken than Don did. And that's not to rip Don, because you'll hear this too. I think Don had a very unique voice and was a very, very important part of what made Dokken great and what I loved about Dokken. But I'm just talking from a songwriting standpoint, from a just performing on album standpoint. Like, Lynch, for those four albums, it's like some of the best guitar playing of all time, in my opinion. And some of the best riffage and solos. I mean, Jesus Christ, Lynch's solos on those four albums are just like some of the best ever recorded, really.
Yeah, I would say after... this is going to be controversial. I put George above Randy Rhoads. I think he's after Eddie Van Halen. Yeah, after Eddie Van Halen, I think he's he's like the second best lead guitarist of the 80s.
He was, for the longest time, man, he was like my number one favorite 80s guitarist. I think like Warren, but then like high school came and like Warren DeMartini took the number one spot of like, you know, like 80s hair metal guitarist. And now it's like Warren, Jakey Lee, and probably George Lynch third. You know, of all time, it would definitely be Ritchie Blackmore, and then Eddie Van Halen are my favorite guitarists of all time, you know, not including just the 80s.
Okay, yeah, but keep in mind, we're not just saying 70s. Like, Eddie Van Halen was still doing, like, Fair Warning.
Yeah,
it's an 80s album. It's a 1981.
Yeah. I'm talking like those three, like Jakey Lee, Warren DeMartini, and Lynch. I consider them like I would categorize that as like my favorite like 80s hair metal like guitars, like the hair or glam metal. I know, because Edwin, you hate the term hair metal. I love it.
Yeah, you know, I don't hate it for some bands
like Nitro.
Yeah, or even like...
All they had going for them was their fucking hair.
I don't know. A lot of those bands in the late 80s, I could kind of see as hair metal. I kind of prefer glam metal for the mid 80s. It might be a minor... like Rat's not hair metal, that's glam metal. That's to me, it's a subtle difference, but I don't know. Maybe Ryan and Johnny understand what I'm getting at.
When they first started, they called themselves fashion rock.
Yeah, I remember that from the Behind the Music. I love that.
I think it's more of a difference between like an aesthetic and and how you dress. Like, Rat had this overall aesthetic, but which is something Dokken could have used more of. Problem is, Dokken didn't really have a down image.
They just couldn't make up their mind, really, about what they wanted to do, like what they wanted their aesthetic to be.
And I do think that had an effect on their popularity. But hey, Ryan, listen, man, you're the MC. We're gonna give you the reins here. You're gonna take control now. You lead us. Tell us what we're doing now.
All right, so we're gonna get into the top 20, and what I'll do is, you know, same thing. If anybody listened to the Van Halen episode or the Crew episode of Rock and Metal Combat podcast, or we did one. We'll do the other one.
You were actually on the episode, but you
that's right. You guys did the Thin Lizzy one.
Yeah, but you made the list for us.
And I also did a Rush one with Mark.
Mark Allen Taylor, Freeform Podcast. There you go. There's a shout-out, Mark.
Yeah, there you go, Mark.
There you go, Mark.
We're just going to go around. I'm going to introduce the song. I'm going to hand it off to a different person each time just because we're going to try to like let the person who introduces the song be somebody who had it pretty high on their list. So that's how we kind of spray it around. So let's get right into it, boys. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
All right. So at number 20, off of Back for the Attack, the first single off of Back for the Attack, Burning Like a Flame. I'm going to take this one to lead off because I had it very high on the list. I had this at number 8. And it's interesting. Like, I hear a lot of people talk about this song, and overall, I don't think it's a particularly, like, super popular song with, like, Dokken Hardcores. I think people like it, but I don't feel like a lot of people love it. I do. There is a little bit of, first of all, I just think it's a great kind of first single pop metal song. Catchy, it's that perfect kind of Dokken mix of, you know, the great Lynch kind of, you know, power chords, but has, you know, it's very melodic and very catchy. But this, there's also a little sentimentality on this song that Back for the Attack coming out and Under Lock and Key, there was about a 2-year gap there, and you know, that was the era where an album came out every year, so it seemed like forever for like hardcore, for me being a hardcore Dokken fan, that I was waiting for that album and waiting, and you're reading articles in Metal Edge and reading Hit Parader, Dokken's working on the album, and then you know they put out Dream Warriors kind of in the middle there, and the album was supposed to come out like right after that, and it still didn't come out for like another almost year after. No, now like 6 months after Dream Warriors. But about a month before the album came out, I used to listen to this radio station, WSOU. It was a Seton Hall, the college in North Jersey. I lived just outside of Manhattan. And it was a great college station. It played just all metal, like 24 hours a day. And they started playing stuff off of Back for the Attack like a month before Back for the Attack even came out. They must have gotten like a promo copy or whatever, but they were playing Burning Like a Flame like a lot. And I was like even calling in and requesting it. And it was just like it was the first new Dokken I had heard in so long. And I was like just so excited for that album. Honestly, in my life, and you've got to take into account how old I was at the time. You know, this is... I'm, you know, 11, 12 years old. Music is my world at that time. And so, you know, anticipating the next album from these bands was like just my life. And I was literally calling into the radio station, play Burning Like a Flame, play Burning Like a Flame. And then 2 weeks after that, and this is like 2 weeks before the album came out, they started playing Kiss of Death too. And I heard Kiss of Death and my like head exploded. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest album of all time. So yeah, just a real sentimental thing with Burning Like the Flame for me because of that like kind of timeline and when I first heard it. So a little sentimentality there, but again, I just think it's a great song and a very cool first single. So from there, we'll go to Edwin. Edwin, what do you think about Burning Like a Flame?
You
actually didn't even have this in your top 25.
No, I did not. So I guess I might be that very Dokken kind of hardcore Dokken fan you were talking about.
Yeah, beyond me, Edwin, we are the only ones I think that had anything post like Lynch era on our list.
Yeah, so just say, I'm not saying that makes me and Eric the biggest Dokken fans here, but it definitely makes us the biggest Don Dokken fans, I guess.
Okay.
Listen, this is a song that has grown on me. So I do really like this song. I don't love it, though. I like the song. I disagree. I respectfully disagree. I don't think it was a good first single. I think it's a catchy song. It should be a single. Maybe the second single, it would have made sense. I don't think, especially this album, Back for the Attack, I don't think it represented it well. I think by the time we were also getting into 87, the tide was already starting to shift a little bit, you know, and music, you know, with Guns N' Roses and stuff, and things were getting a little bit meatier. And Back for the Attack, for the most part, was a meatier, heavier album than the prior one. And I feel like the first single should have... I'm not saying they needed to go full metal like Kiss of Death, but there is a song that maybe might be on this list that we'll talk about later, that I think would have been a better first single that kind of was a better hybrid of the heavier side while still being melodic and catchy. I think this leaned... I mean, this is like literally one of the poppiest songs on the album. And it's like, and on top of it, you have that video with them like dressed up like firemen, and it was a pretty corny video too. Like maybe if it was like a sexier video with a hot chick like burning down a house, you know. But instead, it was them riding around on a fire truck, and it's like the lightest, poppiest song on the album. I just think it gave a lot of metal fans the wrong idea of what Back for the Attack was about. So I think it would have served it better as a second single. That being said, over the years, I have grown to like it, especially once I start to get like really into Cheap Trick and start to get more into power pop, because that's now I listen to this song and I go, well, it's just kind of a perfect power pop song. You know, it even kind of sounds like it could have been like an 80s Cheap Trick song. I really do like the song. I think it's a good song. I think it has a very strong melody. This is a song definitely, especially a lot of the poppier songs, I feel George's guitar playing gives an edge that other bands doing a song like this wouldn't have had. And it definitely elevates the song. And it's a good song. I do like it. It's one of the few songs on this list that didn't make my list. But I do like the song. And I understand. And I want to, you know, I'm glad that Ryan has these feelings towards it and the nostalgia. It made me feel like a jerk for not liking it as much as him.
No, you know what's funny is, like, everything you said you like about the song is exactly what I love about the song. Like, I agree with you. It has, like, kind of Cheap Trick elements to it, like the poppiness of it. I love that. And it's not like every Dokken song, and I kind of like that it's different like that. And also, I agree with you 100% that just that kind of crunching Lynch guitar kind of separates it. It isn't power pop because of the way Lynch plays guitar on the song. So it's a good combo. And again, that's what I love about Dokken, just that contrast of Lynch playing mostly metal guitar to Don's very melodic sensibilities. It's what makes them great. So you done with it, Edwin?
Yeah, I'm done with this one.
All right, we'll turn it over to somebody else who had it on the list and fairly high at number 17, Johnny Vogan. Oh, no. Did we lose Johnny?
Oh, God damn it.
Did we lose Johnny!
Is it something where maybe, like, his computer goes to sleep if he doesn't make any...
Well, I know he's got his mic muted.
I got you. My bad, guys. And you know what's terrible? You know what's terrible? Is I had cracked a beer and done an oh yeah just for Ian Wadley, and I had my mic muted. But.
Oh, yeah, so I want royalties to Ian Wadley.
So my take is, this is one of the first... This came right at my wheelhouse of Motley Crue, Girls, Poison, being a huge fan of all this. And, yeah, the video was terrible. It was just terrible. No thought put into it. Just because Flames in the title of the song doesn't mean we need to run around on fire trucks. But ridiculous. But the song itself, I mean, I tend to maybe disagree with Edwin a little bit, because this is 87. It's Hysteria, Slippery When Wet, Open Up and Say I mean, this is the perfect song for that time. I mean, it's pick your Bon Jovi ballad, pick Hysteria, or You're Born to Be My Baby, or Hysteria, but better lyrics, better guitar. I mean, I think this was the perfect song of the time, but in 1987, you had to have a video that was strong, or it was going to fade. But yeah, I love this song. I think it's a perfect...
you know, pop metal song that leans more towards metal, but with a great, you know, catchy pop chorus. It just still to this mind, it still to this day, it's a head scratcher for me of why this didn't cross over. And the only thing I can think of is those videos, but especially in this case. But I'm a big fan of this song, and I just love Dokken's ability to transition so seamlessly, not just from album to album, but throughout the context of albums, from metal to pop. I mean, it's just nobody can do that better. So that's my take on it, so I'll throw it over to Eric.
All right. Burn Like a Flame. I try to remember. I don't think this one made my list. This is definitely, like, it's not one of my favorite Dokken songs, but I love it in the sense that it brings back a really great fucking memory. Before I get to that, though, I'll mention that it is a good power pop song. Maybe one of the weaker tracks Dokken had in the 80s, but still very solid, you know? I agree with Johnny and everyone else that, you know, the video probably wasn't the best kind of choice for a video at the time. You know, and that's probably what hurt the song's potential, was the fact that, you know, it's this cheesy video in an era where bands were starting to get more serious. You know, thrash was, like, really huge, and you had, like, GNR coming along, so, like, a lot of the hair metal bands were taking note from GNR and just trying to tone it down a little bit, you know, and just go back to straight up just, you know, black leather pants and bandanas, straight hair, no hairspray and all this and that. So it really hurt them, that cheesy video. But now, here's where I get in. I love the cheesy video. I love cheesy shit, you know? I love that cheesy 80s stuff. You know, I fucking love it, man. It's a bad video, but that's what I love about it. It's so stupid. You know, George Lynch playing pool with his fucking guitar, his guitar neck and shit at the very beginning. I love it. I love how stupid it is. And I love this video because, you know, you guys grew up with MTV. You know, I'm a lot younger, you know, and I grew up with VH1 Classic. I'd watch VH1 Classic, watch Metal Mania, like, constantly, man. That's how I discovered a lot of these bands and saw a lot of these videos growing up, was Metal Mania. That was my Headbangers Ball. And one night, it was, like the last, like, 3 weeks of school, I think it was, like, freshman year. I can't remember, but last 3 weeks of school, and, like, my Uncle Len, who, rest in peace, he would always take me, him, and my dad would always go to concerts. So sometimes, like, on a Friday, like, after school, like, all of a sudden my dad would pick me up, you know, he'd be like, hey, man, we're going to go see this show. You know, Len's taking us, he got tickets, and we'd just go, we'd drink, you know, he'd let me drink, you know, I'd drink a bunch of Red Bull vodkas. That's why that's still one of my favorite, like, cocktails to drink, is Red Bull vodka. And we just, like, go see these shows, man, just have a good time, and we'd crash at his apartment that he had at the time. And it's just, I remember we went to see, like, there was, like, Black Label Society, and, like, Dope opened up, and, like, a couple of our, like, really good bands that I can't remember. And it was just a great fucking show, man. Like, Black Label killed it, and, you know, afterwards we went, you know, got some more Red Bulls so we could make Red Bull vodka when we got back to his apartment, got some Taco Bell. Because I loved Taco Bell as a teenager. And, just crashed out of his place. And then, he gave me the remote. And I flipped on fucking Metal Mania. And this is one of the videos I remember seeing. It was the first time I saw the video. I'm like, wow, this video is really stupid. But it's awesome. I love it, you know. And so it's just, it brings back memories. So it brings back that memory of, like, just, you know, having this great night. You know, hanging out with my cool uncle, my dad, who, my dad fucking rules too. And just drinking underage, being a young kid, not having a care in the world, waiting for summer vacation, you know, chasing girls and fucking, you know, going to see these cool concerts, man. And I miss my Uncle Len, man. I had a lot of great memories of him, you know. And he took me a lot of cool concerts, you know. He was like my buddy, man. You know, he's that cool uncle. And I miss him every day, man. So every time I hear a song, I think about that and I think about him. So I'm gonna take a drink to him before we move on to the next song.
All right, drink.
I will as well.
Oh, there right. You go. Uncle Len, man. Uncle Len, he was the best, man. I fucking miss that guy.
Cheers. Drink to Cheers. Uncle Len.
Hell yeah.
All right, so go to number 19 here. Now, this one's a little bit of a dark horse. I didn't see this one coming, I have to be honest. But 3 out of the 4 of us had it in our top 25, and Johnny had it the highest at number 12 off of Breaking the Chains, Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it is Highway Star. I mean, it is Born to Run. It's a classic, you know, car song for me that genre of song that it carries on from the 70s, and I think that's another thing you hear in the music of Dokken is you still hear that journey, you still hear that REO, you know, that 70s influence, and you know, especially in one of these early Dokken songs. I mean, it's a great tune. I mean, great beat. Really, Don is the feature with some great soloing, but Don, you know, he carries you through the song. I think it's a great, great underrated song, and definitely one of the best songs on Breaking the Chains.
Anyway, yeah, this was the song one of the songs I was referring to earlier when I said knowing us, and by us I meant, I wasn't sure about Ryan on this one, but I had a feeling it might make Eric and Johnny's list, and I knew it made mine. So it's a dark horse, but like not a dark horse with a certain clique of people. I thought Knight Rider might make it, but a lot of Dokken fans and a lot of people will be like, "What the fuck? What fucking song is Knight Rider?" it's awesome. I think Johnny and I like Breaking the Chains a little more than you two guys, but I mean, I agree. Obviously, it's not as good as the three albums later, but I still think it's a really good melodic metal album from the 80s. I think it's a strong record. It's my fourth favorite Dokken album, so I think it's a good album. Not as good as the other three. It's definitely more of a Don Dokken solo album with George Lynch playing on it. And they didn't really become the unified group with Jeff Pilson and all of them writing until Tooth and Nail. And obviously, shit went to another level when that happened. But I still think Breaking Chains is a great album. And it has stuff like this, you know. And Knight Rider is a really unique song. You would never hear a song like this again on subsequent Dokken albums. Just got that groove. You know, great music. I love the hook. You know, George is doing some cool riffage on it. But it's just I like Dokken's vocals. It sounds like a song that could have been like in the movie The Wraith. So I'm gonna bring up The Wraith.
Yeah, you love that movie.
Tell me
it's
if
that's right. A good one. Yeah, it's a good movie.
And would Knight Rider have been perfect during one
it
of those would have been. Scenes?
Yeah.
it could also have been like in an episode of the TV show Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Should have been the theme song. Although that show did have a pretty cool theme song as it is. But it's just a badass song. It gives you that vibe of speeding down a highway at night and there's gonna be adventure. You know, it just has that feeling. It's exciting. It has almost one thing about a lot of the Breaking the Chain song, there's almost a little touch of new wave to it. It's just got a different vibe than the other albums. But yeah, I love Knight Rider. It's a badass song, and it made me smile when I saw it was on the list. I was like, even though it wasn't that high on my list, but it did make it. It was a top 25 song. I think it was somewhere between 21 and 25. But when I saw that made the list, it made me smile. I thought it was a cool dark horse to have on this list.
Yeah, I didn't even have it, but I agree. Nice to get a little spring of Breaking the Chains. Since you would like mention, you know, I'll take it from there. Breaking the Chains, love parts of Breaking the Chains, but overall, I just think it's just a little primitive. It's like it doesn't feel to me like Dokken had really found themselves yet. I mean, and if you know the history of the recording of the album, it definitely makes sense. But like this song in particular, I don't think it's terrible, but it just sounds like a little generic to me, and sounds a little bit like just Don didn't know where he wanted to go yet. And again, I'll take this chance. You know, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about Breaking the Chains, but I think this is kind of a good chance to just start the conversation on the overall album. And it was kind of odd because it was originally recorded in 81 and released in Europe. So you have to take it in context. It makes sense when you listen to this album that it's 1981. You can tell it wasn't recorded in
81. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just sounds like that. And Don also had to go to Europe to record this album. This wasn't recorded in L.A. This was he was struggling in L.A. went because he had some contact over in Europe that brought him over there.
It was because he had like some kind of connection with the Scorpions because he was going to replace Klaus Meine. I think they basically like gave him like a favor and got him like some kind of studio time in Germany or something.
Yeah, and that's how. And it was really weird, like, you know, Lynch and Brown apparently like came in very late to just like record parts of it. It was a disjointed kind of recording.
Yeah.
Traditional recording, and you can kind of hear that. And that's why I say it's a little primitive. You can tell that it wasn't a fully formed band yet. There wasn't like a full idea of what they even wanted to be at that time. But it's also interesting, just Michael Wagner was the producer on this, even the original recording in 81. And Wagner went on to be, like, in the early 80s, he was like the mixing guy of like the whole metal world. He did like Accept, Motley Crue, he mastered Master of Puppets, Alice Cooper, Megadeth, Overkill, Ozzy. I mean, list goes on. And then when he got into the cheese metal years, he became a cheese metal producer. And he was doing Great White and Striper and Warrant and White Lion and Skid Row. He did Slave to the Grind and Subhuman Race.
Subhuman Race, yeah.
Sorry.
You know what it is to me? It's Breaking the Chains to me is Too Fast for Love. It's disjointed, it's a mess, but it's great in that way. Because in 1981, there wasn't... When did Breaking the Chains come out?
It came out in America in 83.
Yeah. But when they were initially recording, there was no dominant genre of music, and it was still a blend. It was still very much a blend, and you could hear that, the disjointed blend. But it's still great to me... For that sense of rawness.
Yeah, and that's why this, like I said, there's a little bit of a new wave element even. It's a little different. It's like, because there's a road ahead, and no one really knows exactly which way it's going to be. Like, there's the new wave of British heavy metal. You got a little bit of that, a little bit of a European metal sound on it, a little bit of power pop, a little bit of new wave, a little bit of just, like, classic hard rock, like, you know, radio-friendly hard rock. It's a mix. And then, you know, a couple other classic songs that we may or may not get into that point more in the direction of where they will go. But, yeah, essentially it is a Don Dokken solo album that got re-recorded. Like, even the mix that we know, that we think of as the canonized kind of Breaking the Chains, that isn't the European version. Ryan, have you listened to, like, the original mix? It's on YouTube.
Yeah, I've heard both versions.
Yeah, so it was much rawer, the original version. Yes. But yeah, so they define, and George's guitar is not as prominent as they would, or redefined. Like, he re-recorded some of his guitar lines and they remixed it. So you could, even in the different mixes of this album, they were kind of finding themselves, you know?
And Lynch did co-write more than half the album, but you're right in the sense that it is more of a Don solo album. Don played a lot of guitar on the album too.
Yeah, he played a lot of guitar, and that it was kind of like an organic thing that George just started to get more involved and take over. But even when it was marketed in Germany, it was called Don Dokken's Breaking the Chains.
Yeah, and early in their relationship, like, you follow those first 2-3 years between 81 and 83. It was like George was in, and then he was out, and then he was in, and then he was out. Like, there was not a great relationship between the two of them from day one. They were business partners, and that was it.
Yeah, they never got along. It's funny, because they're both orphans, but with issues, and they don't get along with people. But maybe that's why it's like even worse between each other, you know? Yeah. So who hasn't talked about Knight Rider?
That'll be me.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, Knight Rider. Yeah, I'm not a big Breaking the Chains fan, but I do love the fuck out of this song. I think this is like the second best song on the album besides Another One, which may or may not be on the list. Who knows? Because, for the most part, I really don't like Breaking the Chains. I'll never forget my dad. So I heard Dream Warriors as a kid, and that's what made me be like, man, this Dokken band sounds awesome. And I saw Jeff Pilson in that Rockstar movie. I thought Jeff Pilson was pretty cool. I was like, God damn, like, Dad, I want to hear Dokken. He had two CDs. He had Breaking the Chains and Under Lock and Key. Now, I picked Under Lock and Key because Jeff Pilson was on it, and obviously Jeff Pilson wasn't on. I saw that Juan Crucier played bass on Breaking the Chains, and I'm like, well, Dad, I want to hear Under Lock and Key. He's like, but that one's not as good. Like, this one's better.
Really?
Like,
father said that?
He said his quote was like, Under Lock and Key is a bunch of ballads and love songs. He's like, Breaking the Chains is like more badass. And I'm like, yeah, but this one has Jeff Pilson. So he had like a thing. He was like, all right, point at which member, all right, if you can guess which member on this cover is Jeff Pilson, we'll listen to Under Lock and Key. If not, we'll listen to Breaking the Chains. Now, the thing was, in the movie Rockstar, I think, like, Jeff Pilson, like, dyed his hair, so he looked more blonde in that movie than he did, like, a redhead. So I picked Mick Wild Brown. Like, that's Jeff Pilson. He's like, nope, that's not him. So I had to listen to Breaking the Chains, and now I'm fucking... I thought it sucked. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I thought it sucked, except for two songs. But, I do love Knight Rider. I think it's a badass song. But, yeah, it's definitely... That album is very, like... It's so primitive. Like, listening to Burn Like a Flame... And, like, Knight Rider, it sounds like literally two different bands. Like, it's so primitive sounding. And, yeah, it's like one of those albums where, like, you know, like Razor Fist said at best, there's a lot of great bands out there that they usually don't get it right on the first album. The first album, they're usually still feeling them out, and they're still feeling themselves out trying to find their sound. You know, not every band can be like Iron Maiden or Wasp, or, man, they put out, like, a fucking banger, like, you know, for the first album. Sometimes their best album with the first album. You know, some bands like Dokken and Kiss, you know, they put out, like, a clunker for their first one. But I do love Knight Rider. I think it kicks ass, you know, fun driving song. I mean, I can't listen to it when I drive, or else I might get speeding tickets. So, great song, man. So, yeah, we'll move on to the next one.
All right, well, you can keep on talking, Eric, because the next one is from, originally from the movie soundtrack of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors, and the title track from that soundtrack, Dream Warriors, which was released later on Back for the Attack, but about 6 months before Back for the Attack, this was on a single that you could get. But you had it way high on the list.
Yes.
Number two.
Wow. I think Dream Warriors, man, I think it's like it's a perfect fucking song. If I had to make like a top 10 list of my favorite songs of all time, this one would be on there. I love fucking Dream Warriors. It's just such a great fucking song. Like, everyone's on fire on this song. Now, I do like the single version as opposed to the version that ended up on Back for the Attack. I feel the version on Back for Attack is a little bit more slowed down. I don't really like the production. It's a little bit cleaner production, whereas the Nightmare on Elm Street single version was like a little bit like... A little bit dirtier. It still had some of that earlier 80s production, which I prefer over the cleaner stuff. But man, it's just such a fucking perfect song. This was the song that made me go like, fuck, I ain't check out this band Dokken. Like, I think I was watching it was like some kind of like you know, True Hollywood Story or some bullshit on Nightmare on Elm Street, you know. And I've been wanting to see Nightmare on Elm Street because it looked pretty creepy and like scary, and I want to see some scary shit. And they're talking about all the movies, and they mention, you know, Dokken doing the song for Part 3, which I will admit, Part 3 is my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It's easily up there. It's one of the best horror movies of all time, in my opinion.
Agreed.
And and that song is just a perfect way to end the movie, you know, at the credits. But I saw, like, this heavy metal band, like, singing the song, and I'm thinking, man, that's pretty fucking cool. That band looks awesome. I want to check them out. Sure enough, you know, I heard, like, you know, on Music Choice, on Comcast, you know, I listened to all these different radio stations. I heard Dream Wars. I'm like, fuck, that song rules. I need to hear that shit. I need more of that in my life. And it's just, it's one of my favorite songs. It's easily one of my all-time favorite Dokken songs. It just fucking rules, man. It's so perfect, you know. I fucking love it. Love the video. Just everything about it fucking rules. There's really not much else I could say, but you just need to listen to it. It's a fucking amazing song. It's perfect.
I love it, Eric. You know, yeah, I love hearing you always tell these stories about watching the VH1, and it's the same shit that, you know, us older guys, you're a generation later, but you were discovering this music just, you know, 10, 15 years later, but the same way we did, and I love that about you, and I love that there's still hope for the world when younger guys like you can relate with older guys like us.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Let's go to Johnny, who also had this very high, number 9.
Yeah, I'm right there with Eric. I absolutely love Dream Warriors. One of the first Dokken songs I heard, what really got me into Dokken, and that time, I mean, you guys know how big the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise was, and they really hit it. This is one of the videos where they hit it on, you know. It's actually a cool video. It's a great video. And the thing for me with Dokken is, like, in the 80s, I mean, we didn't need, you know, suck me, fuck me songs here from Don. I mean, the imagery that's in Dokken songs, you know, night, shadows, thunder, lightning, like, hey, we need a song called Dream Warriors. Don, I got you. That's all me. You know what I mean? It's the perfect, perfect, you know, thing to be given to Dokken for him to create, you know, a great, great song around that title. So I just think it's perfect, and it fits right in with, you know, the type of songs you expected to get from Dokken at this point in time. And I really think I like the single version. I like the album version. I love the Beast from the East version. I think it's absolutely great. Mm. That's really my favorite version of the song. But yeah, Dream Warriors is one that's very high for me. And I just love the moodiness of the song, and the video was great, and I really was super into that franchise as a kid, so that really was really what got me into Dokken, was kind of that video.
Hell yeah.
Edwin.
Okay, now, this did not make my list. I know Ryan said that. Yes, damn. It did not make my list, but I do love the song, all right? This is one of the songs that I thought about. Wow, I love Dream Warriors, and it's not making my top 25. I just love 25 songs more. If I had made a top 30 list, it probably would have been somewhere between 26 and 30. It would have got in there. But it's an amazing song, and I know it's one of the... It's funny, because I think chart-wise, In My Dreams is their biggest hit. But I would guess now, largely because of the association with Nightmare on Elm Street, this is the most known Dokken song. I think most people would probably know now. And, yeah, it's a classic song. It's great. It's moody. It's actually Jeff Pilson that actually wrote this one. But Don totally delivers it. The whole band's on fire on it. I agree with Johnny. I think this is easily their best video. They had a couple videos that were all right that we'll discuss. Most of the time, they weren't all right. They sucked. But they had a couple videos that were all right. This is easily their best video, in my opinion.
Oh, obviously, I fucking agree.
Obviously, it helps because they're using, you know, clips from the movie. But they're doing more than that. They're actually shooting some scenes with them, actually interacting with Freddy and Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, and recreating some of the scenes, too, from the movie with them in it.
And George Lynch, you know, with the guitar. Already, he had already used it in the It's Not Love video, but the awesome Skull and Cross, Skull and Bones guitar. And also, I think image-wise, it's probably the best they looked. Like, you know, Don...
I agree.
He had the dark kind of suit that he was wearing. And, they have this kind of gothic metal look that kind of fit their sound. And, I think overall, this is like where image... sound, video, kind of all came together for Dokken for a very fleeting moment, and then a year later they were fucking, fire. They're on a fire truck with, fire. But
it's funny. I almost dressed like Don Dokken for this episode. So I have the concho cowboy boots and the leather pants and leather jacket. And I was dressed like Don for this episode. I'm like, wait a minute, no one's gonna fucking see me. Why am I gonna do all that shit?
It wouldn't surprise me, knowing a little bit that, I know about the entertainment industry and Hollywood, that the reason, obviously, this had a better video, and even the pictures with them, there were a lot of, like, photos of them with Freddy and stuff, and the way they dressed, there probably was, like, costume people that were involved with Nightmare on Elm Street 3, seriously, that were kind of helping Dokken a bit with their image. That's why probably a little elevate it. They didn't have those people helping them when they did the next video,
For real, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they should have maybe, enrolled that person and had them dress them for the other videos, too. But they looked pretty cool during the Heaven Sent video, I thought. That kind of fit in more with this kind of look, the darker, kind of more gothic Dokken. But, yeah, it's a fucking classic song, classic video. I love it. I also agree with you, Eric. I like that single version the best. That's actually the first time I heard it. I heard this was because I was only seven or eight at the time. But my brother.
I think I was the same age when I heard it.
Yeah, but it was like 10 years later or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, so I heard my brother brought it me. He was the Dokken fan. And he was a hardcore Dokken fan like Ryan, and he was 5 years older. And he got the cassette right when the movie was out. I remember I was too young to see it, to see a movie like that in the movie theaters. But I remember seeing the ads for it, for Dream Warriors, and ooh, it looked scary, and I was intrigued by it, and I thought maybe in a few years I'll be able to watch it, and in a few years I did. But at the time, I was still a little too young that my parents wouldn't let me, and they were pretty lenient, but they wouldn't let me see, like, a horror movie. Like, I could see R-rated comedies, like Eddie Murphy movies and shit like that, you
but
know?
But not horror.
But not horror. Not unless it was on, like, edited for TV, you know?
Yeah. And Dream Warriors to me is just—it goes beyond being a great horror movie. It's just a great movie.
Well, it's a great, like, a fantasy horror.
Yeah, adventure.
And I loved it. You know, I saw it, like, I guess I rented it, like, on home video just a couple years later when I was in junior high. That's when I saw all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But before that, for years. So imagine this: for years, I just know Dream Warriors as a docking song without seeing the movie.
Me too.
My brother had that single, and that single also had Back for the Attack as the B-side. And even as a kid, I remember thinking it was weird that Back for the Attack wasn't on Back for the Attack. But I knew that single version. And even as a kid, I remember thinking that the version on Back for the Attack, I didn't think it had the same bite. It didn't sound as cool as the cassette. The single version, I think that's what you call it, because he had the cassette. I think they probably had it on CD, too. I don't know. Ryan, did they have that single on CD, or was it just a single?
It was a single, and I don't know about CD, and actually, it's funny. I mean, are you done with the song?
Yeah, I'm pretty much done. I will say one thing, is Back for the Attack was one of the first CDs that my brother brought home. That I remember. But before that, it was all cassettes. All the Doc and stuff he had were cassettes until Back for the Attack.
Yeah, how old's your brother?
Now he's like, he's 53.
All right, so he's a couple years older than me. But I'm 51, and actually, that was funny. I think I said earlier that I was 12 when Back for the Attack came out. I was actually like 14 or 15. But
that makes sense.
Anyway,
yeah, he was in high school. That's all I know. He was in high school, and I was not in junior high yet. I was still in elementary school.
Yeah. That's why I love knowing, like, the age is important when you're having context of music conversations, because it makes a lot of sense, you know, when you hear, like, when this person first heard this song or whatever. But the single is exactly, this is the notes I had down for the song, saying it, and I'm reading it on my page. I had the single for this, because as I said earlier, when we were, there was like this wait for Back for the Attack, it kept on getting pushed back. And this came out in the middle, like, while Dokken fans were waiting. And I, as soon as I could, and, you know, I wasn't driving yet, but, you know, my brother was at that point, and now he drove me to the mall, and I got the single, and it had that, this, you know, the original version of this, which, as Eric already said, is a different version from the Back for the Attack version. And I agree, the single version is better.
Well, just to clarify, it's a different mix.
Yeah,
it is.
It's the same performance. It's not like they re-recorded the song, but it's a remix essentially.
Faster, and like the production's just like more like it's more dirtier and meaner. It's less polished.
Yeah, I think they needed. They wanted it to sound closer to what the rest of Back for the Attack sounded like, which would be my guess. That's why they remixed it and sped up the tempo. I mean, they slow down the tempo. I mean, I don't know what they did in the mix, but yeah, definitely. Even when you hear it in the movie, it sounds kind of like that. Sounds like yet another mix as well. It sounds like the single mix, but it's like in some kind of different, like, you know, Dolby or I don't know, you know, whatever it is, doubly, like Spinal Tap. But it's in something different. You ever notice that? Doesn't it sound a little different at the end of the movie too?
A little bit, yeah. And it's funny when you say Dolby, it reminds me of that movie fucking Demons. Yeah. Where, like, they hear the screaming or someone getting killed, they're like, what's that noise? It's like, oh, it's just the Dolby or whatever.
Same here, Who Made Who. When you hear the versions in the actual movie, they sound a little different. Yeah. They sound like different mixes. So, I don't know, it might have something to do with how they mix the sound for the whole movie. But that was around the same time period, too, because that was, like, what, 86, Who Made Who? So it was an awesome time for making awesome music for awesome movies, you know?
Yeah.
So you had the single, and what did you think? Did you like, were you surprised when Back for the Attack wasn't on Back for the Attack?
Yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I like the song Back for the Attack, didn't you?
That song fucking rules.
Yeah, I was actually, I'll be honest. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see if it makes the list or not. But yeah, I was like, I feel like Back for the Attack is like one of their most popular like B sides.
Yeah, and I love, you heard the version with Jeff Pilson singing? Jeff Pilson has a fucking great voice.
He has an amazing voice.
Yeah, but yeah, he helps to give a lot of the edge during the choruses of Dokken songs. Yeah,
Pilson is kind of like the Michael Anthony of this band, but like where Pilson is a little bit more diverse. Michael Anthony is kind of all high end. If you ever hear Michael Anthony sing lead, it's kind of embarrassing. I mean,
it's horrible.
Yeah,
whereas Pilson's is actually a pretty good bass player, unlike Michael Anthony.
Sounds like my neighbor at a karaoke bar when he sings lead. But
yeah,
Jeff Pilson can do both. Jeff Pilson's a really good singer and has a really good voice. And I mean, it's amazing. Jeff Pilson might be the least known member of this band. He has the most writing credits on those first four albums. He wrote more than Don or George.
He's one of my top five favorite bass players of all time, man. I love fucking Jeff Pilson. He's a
very
hero of mine.
Very talented guy. He is the unsung hero of Dokken.
Yeah, and I mean, he's full-time in Foreigner now, and he has been for like almost 20 years now. But yeah, Pilson just, I mean, he's one of those guys that like everybody in the music industry knows. Everybody knows how talented he is. But the general public, nobody knows who Jeff Pilson is.
Yeah, but he's also a great guitar player too. He does some acoustic guitar work. He's a very talented guy. He has a lot of side projects too. You know, he's got that Black Swan band and with Red Beach. Wow. Yes. Yeah, and also he sang live on a couple of Dokken songs on the One Night Only live acoustic album. Yeah, and he sounds great. You know,
I think it was, I'm trying to remember because I saw them on like the Dysfunction. Is it Into the Fire that he said?
No, just Mick Got
Brown,
Lucky.
Just Mick Got Brown Lucky. Sings Into the Fire.
Yeah.
Just Mick Brown was a good singer too.
Mick Brown had a good voice as well.
That's
you know?
Why they had those harmonies. I mean, they had three guys that could all sing.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of talent. A lot of talent in that Dokken band.
No doubt about it.
Anything else to say about Dream Warriors?
Yeah, just finishing off on Dream Warriors. Like, at the time, I loved the song. But I will admit that, like, over the years, it is a little dated to me. Like, I love the opening riff. And also, this was kind of, you see this song with the evolution of George's kind of tone from album to album, like most guitarists. Like, the tone changes a little bit. And this was kind of giving a primer of what his guitar was going to sound like on Back for the Attack, which was just little to me, a little more like tuned up and a little bit like more crisp than what you heard on the first, you know, three Dokken albums. And I love the tone by then. There's different things I like about the tones on all the albums, but Dream Warriors was kind of like a precursor to that and giving you a little hint of what he was going to sound like. And I love that riff. But to me, the chorus is a little cheesy. It's a little too much for me. I don't hate the song by any stretch, but it wasn't on my list. But I have great memories of that time and that movie. I love that movie. I was at that movie in the theater opening night.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
And love that movie to this day. And it just, you know, again, great memories of that time of being a Dokken fan. And like, you know, this band that you're like really rooting for gets a soundtrack on this big movie. And it was a cool time for Dokken. And I have, you know, more great memories than I, you know, super love the song. That's what's great about music, you know, that just little time markers. It brings you back to that time in your life. And this song would definitely qualify for that. All right, so everybody done with Dream Warriors? Any more on it?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Up to 17, and this is another dark horse. I don't know if this is one. Is this the one you were talking about, Edwin?
Yes, this is the one. This is the one I was surprised made the list. I remember. Like I said, even Knight Rider being a dark horse, I just felt Johnny and Eric might be with me on that one, and I was right. But this one, I gotta tell you, I did not think anyone was gonna pick it. Not because we'll find out what I think about it. But not necessarily because I dislike it. It's just not one I thought people would think about. Although it does have a kind of a poignancy to it, which yeah, I'm sure you'll bring up, Brian. But yeah, go ahead. This was the big shocker for me that this made the list.
All right, so coming in at number 17 here was not on any of the studio albums. It was on the live album. And the only studio track from that album, Walk Away, which ended up, for the time before the breakup, being the last recorded Dokken song. And I had this very high on the list. This was number 7 for me. This is my favorite Dokken ballad. I just absolutely love this song. I love George's guitar on this song. I think it's one of Don's like better just lyric writing and his vocal on this. I absolutely love. And also, you know, just it was like the perfect last song for them to record, Walk Away. I mean, it said it. It was so, I mean, I don't think it was any, you know, coincidence that it was, they knew it was the last song they were putting out until, you know, a very brief reunion. But just love this song. A beautiful, beautiful ballad. The tone of Lynch's guitar, that solo. Again, I want to talk about a minimalist solo, and I love minimalist solos. You know, great guitar players like Eddie Van Halen and George, they know when to shred and they know when to play for the song. Mm-hmm. And that solo is just gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's soaring, but he doesn't overdo it at all. I just love Walk Away. So we'll go from me to another person. Eric, you had it high at 16.
Yeah, this song was a grower for me. This is another one I discovered through Metal Mania on VH1 Classic. I saw the video, and I didn't like it at first. You know, it was just too, you know, when you're young, you know, a lot of these slower songs, you're not really big on. These are songs you get into when you get older, you know, and you appreciate more slower ballady type songs. But I love this song, and it was George Lynch's guitar that really sold me on this song. You know, the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, God damn, the guitar work by Lynch is fucking amazing. Because, like, you're right, he knows when to shred, and he knows when to, like, hold back and play something with more emotion and more feeling. And that's one thing I like, you know, the older I get, you know, when you're young, you love guys that just play, like, 1,000 miles a minute, you know, your Yngwies and this and that. But the older you get, the more you appreciate people that play with more emotion than they do, like, just playing as fast as possible. And George can do both. He can play fast, and he can shred with the best of them, but he can also add emotion and feeling to his solos, and that's really what I feel with this. And this is, like, the perfect breakup song, because, yeah, the band was fucking done at this point. You know, they're breaking up. The video even symbolized that. They're each, like, filmed separately. You know, it's the band was done, and perfect breakup song, perfect song to end their career with, you know, end their career, the four of them together with, until they obviously briefly reunited. I love in the video, fucking Don Dokken has those fucking braids in his hair. He looks like a 15-year-old girl that just went on a family vacation to Jamaica and came back with fucking braids in his hair. It looks so horrible. It's like, God, why has he got those fucking braids in his hair? That looks so stupid.
Oh, that's so funny.
I dated a girl who, like, she went on a vacation to Jamaica with her family over, like, Christmas break, and she came back, she had those fucking braids, those damn braids in her hair. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, yeah, that's exactly what Dom looked like.
I am laughing so hard because, like, the guys I was talking about earlier, my boys in high school, and I'm still friends with them to this day, but we called him during that time period, we called him Terrence Trent Dokken, because Terrence Trent D'Arby was a big artist at the time who had braids, and we were like, what the fuck is this with Don with the braids? Is it
I know!
And it's so un-Don.
It just looks horrible. It's like another example of, like, God damn, Dokken just can't get the fucking image right.
Hey, shout out to my boys, Tim, Brian Andrews, and Tim Andrews. They'll be listening to this, but those are the guys, Terrence Trent Dokken, we called him for for full 2 years.
Johnny, you talk about this one next.
Well, I this was on my list too. I'm a big fan. I very sentimental that, you know, Walk Away was the final track on Beast for the East. I'm actually holding my near mint copy of Beast from the East as I say this. I'll probably put some pics up of this at some point in time. I have a great copy. I mean, perfect gatefold's in perfect condition, everything's perfect about it, but I think it's great. I definitely probably besides Alone Again, maybe my second favorite Dokken ballad. I think that you get to the video, oh man, what a piece of shit this is. I mean, it's just like we can't stand to be near each other at all. So, you know, you watch this thing, you see they're in the, Don is looking retrospectively out over the ocean, he's also standing in a desert at one point. There's a hawk in the video. Snake. They're in a pavilion playing. There's fire. There's no fire. I mean, they're in the forest. I mean, there's no time, no direction. Nothing whatsoever that makes sense.
You're watching this video like, you know what? I kind of miss the firefighter Don Dokken.
it's like Motley Crue's Without You. I mean,
oh, there's fuck fire. That video.
There's various animals just appearing. They make no sense. I mean,
animals were very popular in the late 80s in videos. It's like Michael Jackson, black and white.
Don with the dreads. I mean, it's just the whole thing is very disjointed and like it basically screams, "We're done. We're done. That's it.
We fucking hate each other. We're done."
Yeah, but as a song, looking at it retrospectively, I think it's a tremendous song.
I'm actually watching the video as
you're... Oh Jesus!
Yeah, you see all these, and there's an Indian. There's also a random Indian who appears. With a cowboy hat on in various scenes.
Like, what the fuck's up with that? It's like the weird naked Indian in Wayne's World 2. Like, why is this here?
There's no reason.
There's a snake. There's a hawk.
Yep. That's animal cruelty right there.
Don is riding the snake to the lake. You know, he's getting his Jim Morrison on.
It's a trip, man. I'm telling you, it's wild.
All right, Edwin, you're last on this one.
Okay, yeah, I'm not the bad guy, just because I didn't have it on my list, because this, like Dream Warriors, actually, I love this even more than Dream Warriors. This probably would have been, like, I don't know, like 26th or 27th, you know, but there was just 25 songs I loved more. But this is a beautiful song. It's a dark and haunting ballad. You know, that's the thing about a lot of Dokken ballads, like Alone Again, is there's a lot of mood to it, you know, and it feels like it's coming from a real place. It is very poignant. It sounds like, yeah, we're breaking up, and let's actually write a song about it. Like, let's actually do a song about us breaking up, in a sense. And it's like an unexpected and, I would say, a kind of subtle and sophisticated way to end a live album that was essentially a celebration. It's a great live album. Probably one of the best live albums from the 80s, a period that I don't think is that strong with live albums, not like the 70s. But Beast from the East is a great live album. Like Johnny Vogan, I have it on vinyl. Also an awesome copy, you know, gatefold. It's great. We also both got live bootleg Aerosmith. So we're part of that club. But yeah, it's like it was a sophisticated move. Like, I don't feel like Motley Crue and a lot of bands under the same scenario would wrap up this way, you know? And yeah, technically, yeah, they came back again, but it was never like even like, you know, dysfunctional is essentially, it's kind of like going back to the roots of Breaking the Chain. That's essentially a Don Dokken solo album that then George and Jeff and the band kind of got drafted in about halfway through the recording. So that, it's not, there was never really a purely Dokken album in the way that you had that run of albums from Tooth and Nail to Beast from the East, where they're kind of unified as a songwriting unit, you know, working out songs together, and kind of, even if they all hate each other, they're kind of musically coming together as a unified, you know, force. And this really ends that era. Like, and the song has that poignancy, and they never, even though, like Eric, I like a lot of the stuff they did later, they never really captured the spirit of 80s Dokken. And so this song is very poignant. It's a beautiful ballad, and it's only to Dokken's credit that it did not personally make my list, but I do love it. And even though I was surprised to see that you all loved it so much, I was happy to see it on the list, and I thought, yeah, you know, this should be on the list, and I'm glad it was on the list. Great song, great pick, guys.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, 100%. Yeah. I was really happy. Obviously, I had it high, but I thought it was just fitting for it to make the list, being that last song. All right, so we will move on to number 16, and the first entry from Tooth and Nail, the very heavy When Heaven Comes Down. And I will start this one because I had it the highest rank. Three of us had it on the list. When Evan comes down, man, this is metal. I mean, this is and you know, this album, and you'll hear as we go on with all the songs how much I love this album. It was part of that year, that big year of 84 that just, you know, turned me, and this song is a big one on it. You know, that crunching riff, that middle breakdown, man, when it's just like, you know, all the instruments stop and he's playing the riff and you hear the dun 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 dun. Like, it is just so good. And the guitar tone, it's a very, you know, early 80s sounding guitar tone on this album. It's very imperfect and it's kind of guttural and almost like, I wouldn't go as far to say as it sounds like a demo, but it is not like a really polished super
produced. It's dirtier.
Yeah, it's very dirty. And a lot of those albums at that time had that like dirty sound to it, and I love that. And, you know, I always thought, you know, more than a lot of the other L.A. bands, I thought I always heard a lot of European metal influence with Dokken. And this song is a very good example of that. Like, this song to me, like, sounds like if, like, the Scorpions and Priest had a baby, it would be When Heaven Comes Down.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the screaming that Don does on this is very Priest. Just, you know, the heaviness of it and the you know, the guitar tone of it is very, very, to me, kind of European metal sounding. And yeah, always, I thought Don sang more in that style than most of the LA guys did. And it's part of what made Dokken so unique and so good. I always point these out in these because you guys know I am like a just total junkie with watching old bootleg stuff on YouTube, old live shit. 86 version of this. Listen to the whole song because it's unbelievable. But Lynch's solo in that live version is just like, oh my god, it like ridiculous live rendition. He fucking nails it. Love this fucking song. So heavy. One of my favorites on Tooth and Nail. It was number 12 on my list. It was number 15 on Johnny's list. Johnny, When Heaven Comes Down.
Love this song. Love all this album. I mean, this definitely one of my favorite records of all time. Because you know that's my wheelhouse. That early 80s, you know, mid 80s. To, you know, 87 is where like a lot of my favorite High and Dry, you know, Shout at the Devil, Out of the Cellar, and I think Dokken and a lot of those bands have the common thread of that first, you know, that debut. You know, they weren't Appetite for Destruction debuts per se. The Rat EP followed with, you know, Out of the Cellar and Too Fast for Love, which was disjointed, and all of a sudden you hear Shout. I mean, it's similar to that theme with Breaking the Chains, and then you hit Tooth and Nail where they find this sound. It unlike those other bands, they were able to take Tooth and Nail and not deviate totally from it, but take the metalness of it and add a pop sentiment and still be good. And still be successful and not watered down. I mean, and especially When Heaven Comes Down, is Dokken is so great with these mid-tempo rockers that you hear, like, In Heaven Comes Down, the heaviness and the screaming guitar and this mid-tempo rocker, and then it evolves into like a song like The Hunter, you know, with a little bit more harmony and a little bit more polished. But yeah, I just love this record. It's definitely one of my favorite of the time period and favorite all time records, honestly. And you guys touched on Lynch's tone. I mean, his tone on this record, you know, some of the melodic guitar that he plays is really second to none. I think it's tremendous.
So Edwin, you take it from here. You had it at number 18.
18, a very strong 18. I mean, everything in my top 20 is a very strong entry. Obviously, I feel like we're all going to be doing a lot of Tooth and Nail gushing. I think it's one of those albums, like most people agree, that's Dokken's greatest album. I'll be honest, I don't know anyone that doesn't think Tooth and Nail's Dokken's greatest album.
Honestly, it's got to be one of the more universal agreed upon, if anything.
Yeah.
I have a soft spot for Under Lock and Key, but like Tooth and Nail is like second. So I mean, Tooth and Nail is fucking up there.
Okay, so but you're kind of acknowledging, like, objectively, you kind of
see that, it's just objectively, I like Under Lock and Key the best, personally. But
you
like,
mean the other way. Subjectively, you Under Lock and Key.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Objectively...
Oh yeah, Tooth and Nails is like easily their best, but my personal I prefer like Under Lock and Key, but and Tooth and Nail for me is my number two. So
yeah, I got it. But yeah, I mean yeah, Under Lock and Key. We'll talk about that when we get to a few of those songs. No doubt we will. Tooth and Nail, yeah, it's a perfect metal album. I like that Johnny brought up that the chorus does get a little into like a foreshadowing of the Hunter. It is a little melodic, but man, when that song first comes on with that riff, it's it depends on your definition of heaviness. Like, there are some songs that are a little more furious and definitely a little faster that we might be getting to. But I would argue that this could be Dokken's heaviest song. It's definitely their darkest sounding
song. Heavy.
Yeah, it has a almost, along with some of those other bands you mentioned, I think there's even a little touch of Sabbath that you don't normally hear in Dokken. It's doomy. Like, that opening riff is... it's kind of a doomy riff for Dokken.
Yeah, and background vocals, it has that like weird distortion on one of the mics where it almost sounds like a monster. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it has a thundering quality that you would have going back to like Master of Reality. It has a little bit of that kind of monster sludging through, menacing sound. And you would hear it also like with some Metallica tracks when they slowed things down a bit, like the thing that would not be, you know, be... which Eric loves, and Harvester Sorrow, you know what I mean? Like, it has a little bit of that groove, that dark, predatory groove to it. Like, some shit's going down. And it's, you know, this could have been, like, used in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie as well, but it wasn't. But it's just such a badass tune. My brother, he had the first three albums on cassette, but I guess he didn't really like Breaking the Chains too much. He would play Breaking the Chains a lot, the song, but then stop it. And whereas Tooth and Nail and Under Lock and Key, he played those cassettes all the way through, all the time. And also Back for the Attack when he got that CD. So those three albums I heard a lot when growing up. So I had I also, and we'll talk a little more about this when we get to Under Lock and Key songs, but I had a little bit of a... I would say a misconception. Like, I thought Dokken was a bigger band than they were. Just because.
Me too.
Yeah, because my brother played them so often. I knew all these songs so well that I just assumed a lot of these songs were, like, radio staples. I did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this one, obviously, even as a kid, I knew was a heavy, like, album track. But, man, it was just like a classic metal song. So many songs on Tooth and Nail just sounded like classic songs to me, you know? So it wasn't until I was older and a teenager that I realized that not everyone knew all these songs from, like, these albums. But, yeah, a classic song, one of the heaviest Dokken songs ever. I would say the darkest sounding song ever. And just badass. This and maybe a few other songs that we'll get to on the list. To me, if you're talking to, like, some headbanger or some fucking metal kid that's talking to a younger metal kid that doesn't really know his heavy metal, he's like, oh, Dokken's hair metal. Fucking play it in this song and be like, yeah, tell me this is hair metal. Yeah, that's what I thought, bitch. You know, this is a straight up fucking amazing heavy. This is what I'd call traditional heavy metal music. And it's an amazing song. And we gotta move on because we can't keep talking about this song forever.
Oh no, I gotta talk about
it. Eric's gotta talk about this song too.
Eric didn't have it on the list.
Oh, is Eric the center?
Yeah, this is one of those really great songs that just didn't make it to the list.
Although it kind of makes sense with your feelings about the thing that should not be. But at
least this song, unlike the thing that should not be by Metallica, this is actually a good song.
Okay, so you do like it.
I'm surprised you guys didn't mention like the opening riff on the song sounds like a more slowed down version of Unchained the Night. You guys ever notice that? It sounds like Unchained the Night, but like a little bit more slowed down, and like the riff, and obviously production's a little bit like
dirty. What you said.
Yeah, I will never forget, man, when my dad went to circuit. He picked me up. It was his weekend to have me. Like, I'm in elementary school, and I'm just getting into all this fucking metal. And you know, at the time, the only songs I heard off this album was the singles, which the singles are a little bit softer than the rest of the album. The rest of the album is like pretty fucking heavy, probably the heaviest Dokken album. And he picked this up, Circuit City had like a sale. And I remember just the album cover blew me the fuck away, because I love Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's my favorite black and white Universal monster movie, and I was obsessed with it as a little kid. So seeing like the Creature from the Black Lagoon hand on the album cover just blew me the fuck away. And I'll never forget my dad getting this album and like playing it. And I'm just getting into Dokken at the time. And I think I finally heard Tooth and Nail, the song, which to me blew me away. It melted my face off, because I'm like, that song is fucking heavy. And I just remember listening to this album just being blown away. This is like some of the heaviest shit I ever heard. And, you know, this one in particular, man, this shit fucking ruled. I love When Heaven Comes Down. This is one that it didn't make my list, but that just goes to show how fucking great Dokken is. A song this amazing won't make your fucking, couldn't like miss someone's list. It's just so fucking killer and heavy, and this is some metal shit. Like, this is fucking metal, and man, it, anyone out there that's maybe not into hair metal and like maybe think Dokken's kind of a pussy ass band, man, go bust out Tooth and Nail. Listen to that fucking album, man. That shit fucking will melt your fucking face off, especially this fucking song. This song will stomp your balls in the dirt, man. It's so fucking heavy.
Melt your face, stomp your balls.
I'm gonna write a song called that. Like, that's like the Quiet Riot song, stomp your feet, clap your hands. Only this one's gonna be cooler.
Also, as Mick Watkins, a little shout out to our brother Mick Watkins, who also loves his Dokken. It kicks your dick in the dirt.
Yeah, kicks you right in the nuts, and you see his little foot pop up.
Same. No reference.
Dick Kick City.
Dick Kick City. I like that.
Also a concert staple for the most part. They always play this.
It's on Beast from the East. And yeah, and Lynch's solos are crazy and wild and kinetic. And you can tell he really loves playing on this one. And it's just badass. And it just has that cool demonic sound, you know, with the choruses. And I love it.
All right, moving on to number 15. And Edwin is going to lead us off here. Had it very high at number 5, the third entry from Back for the Attack, Standing in the Shadows.
Yes, love this song. Hey, I'm disappointed it's not higher, because obviously I made it higher. Yeah, it's one of my favorite Dokken songs of all time. It is... Yeah, I think, and you could back me up on this, Ryan, because you got my list. I don't actually remember everything on my list, but I think this is my highest song from Back for the Attack. I think, if I'm thinking about this.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there you go. So I guess that means this is my favorite song from Back for the Attack. And thinking about it, this is my favorite song from Back for the Attack. It is, oh my God, everything. If I was to try to describe to an alien that came to Earth what a Dokken song is and everything that makes a Dokken song awesome, I think this would be a really good example, Standing in the Shadows. Because talk about fucking... I mean, I think, for one thing, if there's a VIP on the Back for the Attack album, it is George Lynch. That's the album where I think his guitar tone, you know, you mentioned his different guitar tones, I feel like that's... You could definitely argue, I think, that the two prior albums, song for song, had stronger songs throughout. But Back for the Attack is kind of the peak of George Lynch as a guitar genius. And you could hear he was really taking his time with getting the guitar tone down. And there's just this jagged sound that he's just kind of perfected on it. And obviously, like, the album prior was a little glossier and poppier, and they kind of took away a little of that jaggedness that he had on Tooth and Nail. But here, on Back for the Attack, kind of comes back with a vengeance. And it's got a very jagged sound. And this sounds a little like... it does the finger tapping, the kind of Angus Young-inspired finger tapping that, of course, was on the other song from the last album, It's Not Love. But it sounds like he's doing like more interesting things. And I love that song, but it sounds like he's doing more interesting things with that finger tapping technique on this song. There's just a lot going on guitar-wise. And that's not to take away from the rest of the band and the wonderful melodies. And a lot of the songs on Back for the Attack, it is like a group effort. A lot of them are all co-writing the songs together. And the bass line's great. The melodies, Don, I think it's one of the strongest vocal performances. There's a real majesty. There's a real pageantry to how he presents the song. I would say kind of like a poppier Judas Priest. A lot of times I think Dawkins like a poppier Judas Priest because they have that pageantry.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just there's a mystical, cool quality to the song. And I love the lyrics and the vibe. And man, there's a lot of songs that I think should have been released as singles and had videos that they didn't do. And this is one of them. I think this would have been a really cool, definitely for like the Headbangers Ball crowd in the late 80s. I just think it's a really great song. It is a song that they played during this tour. It's on, if you got the vinyl or cassette version of Beast from the East, it's on that. It wasn't on the CD version. But it sounded great live. It's, oh man, I could just go on and on. It's one of my favorite 80s metal songs of all time. I just love Standing in the Shadows. And to me, it's a top-tier Dawkins song. So even though I would have it higher, I was just happy to see it, you know, be on this top 20. So I'm just thrilled that, you know, it got on the list. So right on. Love Standing in the Shadows.
Yeah.
All right, Johnny, you're next on this one. You had it at 18.
So had I made the list today, it probably would have been a lot higher. I did. I remember making a comment to Edwin the other day. I was listening to my Beast from the East vinyl, and I really, really, really love that version of Stand in the Shadows. I mean, it's got just killer guitar. Don's lyrical delivery is awesome. And I would have it higher. I think the lyrics have a great, like, ethereal quality that a lot of the Dawkins songs have. With the imagery of, like, shadows, night, the streets, and that all would have made a great music video. I think it's one that they did miss the mark on at that point in time. But and also, you know, George is playing the little intro pieces that he comes up with to get into the riff of the song. It's really great. And it would be higher on my list. It's probably my second favorite song on Back for the Attack, now that I look back on it and have listened to it a couple times just going into this episode. Definitely top tier Dawkins for me.
Right on.
Yeah. Eric. Oh, my God. I will never forget the day I heard Staying in the Shadows. So Back for the Attack was one of the last, well, I mean, the last of the classic Dawkins albums I finally got around to listening to, because my mom didn't have it on CD and my dad didn't have it on CD. And I knew the singles from it because my mom had like a Dawkins greatest hit. So I knew the singles. I loved the singles. Now, I got my dad's record collection in high school. I think it was junior or senior year. So junior or senior year, I got my dad gave me his vinyl collection, and my mom finally got her record player working. And so I remember just listening to all these vinyls my dad had, and one of them was Back for the Attack. He had like a Back for the Attack like in mint condition. And I'm like, well, fuck, this is the one Dawkins album I've not heard yet. And I heard this song by an accident. I was taking the needle, I was getting ready to drop it on the record at the beginning. Well, I fucked up and, like, I accidentally dropped the needle too early, and it literally landed, like, right before this song was about to hit. And I heard Staying in the Shadows, and it blew my fucking dick off. I had to go find that. I had to go find it, you know, before the
dogs.
You
gotta go find your dick on the ground.
I had to go find it before the dogs got to it. And, but man, I was just Standing in the Shadows fucking rules, man. Like, I love this song, man. Like, this should have been, like, one of the singles, man. This would have fit in perfectly with, like, whatever it was, like, 88, I believe. Like, at that time when metal bands are getting more serious, whether you're a hair metal band or thrash, it was getting more serious. It was less about the makeup and the bullshit. I mean, although that was still going on, you had shit like Trickster and whatnot, but you know, you had like these bands like, you know, taking notes from either the thrash bands or Guns N' Roses, and it's like, man, this song would have been so fucking perfect. Like, I could see them doing a cool video with this, like nothing too crazy or cheesy, just like a simple video, but man, it rules. And the only thing better than this song is all the live versions they have. There's a lot of bootleg versions out there that, like, it's even better live. Like, this song just fucking rules live. The way Don sings it just kicks ass. I love, like, the tapping like George Lynch does. And it's just, it's a perfect fucking song. This, you know, technically this is my favorite song off Back for the Attack. Because technically, I like the single version of Dream Warriors better than the version that ended up on Back for the Attack. So by technicality, I'd say this is my favorite song off Back for the Attack. It fucking rules, man. I fucking love it.
Now, is Ryan the bad guy here? It sounds like we all want this fucking behind.
Somebody has to be the bad guy. So,
what you're saying, though, about as far as timeline, though, Back for the Attack is such a long record.
It's just too long, in my opinion.
They could have got more life out of the album. Like, you could feel the change in the musical current, like Burning Like a Flame. You know, it comes out first, and it's still in that poppy wave of Slippery When Wet, Hysteria is still current. And then towards the end of the year, you could feel the change. And that's when, like, a final single, like, Standing in the Shadows could have, like, really turned the whole record, you know, more commercial.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about that album. There were so many goddamn songs that they could have actually weathered through kind of a change over the next year or two with different song choices. But, you know, I'm surprised Ryan doesn't love this song as much, because he's Mr. George Lynch here, and this is like George Lynch City, this song. So explain yourself, Ryan.
I'm not sad. Like, I don't hate the song. My biggest complaint with... I love Back for the Attack, but my biggest complaint of it is I think it's a little bit of a bloated album.
Me too.
And like Johnny said, it's long. I mean, for the first time, Dokken has like multiple 5+ minute songs, and they had never done that before. So I do think that is a little bit of a weakness of the album. And while if I was cutting it down to a 10-song album, Standing in the Shadows would make it, but it would be at the tail end of like my favorite songs on the album. I love the solo. The verses kill me though. You guys like Don a lot more than I do in general. And
that he does really shine in the verses.
This is a Don song. And I mean, if you look at the writing credits on this album, it's a lot of mixed writing credits, but they list the guy who the primary songwriter is first on this album. And this is one of the ones where Don's name is first. This is a Don song. And so it makes sense that you and Eric really like this song, because this is the kind of stuff where Don loses me. It's just like the verses are so melodramatic. It's just too much over the top.
Yeah, really?
Like, I don't buy it.
You don't buy that Don's not walking through the city streets at night in the shadows wearing a hat?
He always wears a hat, too. I want one of those hats with the concho belt thing on it.
And then, you know, like, the guitar riff's not bad, but it's kind of like a poor man's It's Not Love.
Oh, that broke my heart.
No doubt, you guys all mentioned live. It's a much better live song than it is on the album.
God, you're breaking my balls, Ryan.
It's unfortunate, too, that the Spotify version does not have Standing in the Shadows on it.
Yeah, that was only on, like, you gotta, that was like, I think the only version it was on was the CD, because like the original.
No, it's the other way.
It's on the album. It's on the album and the cassette.
It's on the record and the cassette.
And wasn't it like combined with Sleepless Nights?
Yeah, Sleepless Nights also didn't make the cut either for the original CD.
Like the bonus.
It is on the Hard Candy, Rock Candy remaster now. Does have it. Which, Eric, you have. I hooked you up with that. But if so now if you get the Rock Candy remaster, both those songs are included.
And this is final?
No, this is a CD. There's actual CDs. I don't know how much they go for now on Amazon Marketplace. But there are remasters by this company, Rock Candy. They also did Rats catalog.
They do a great job.
Yeah.
Hey, I bought a bunch of those Rock Candy remasters. I have Tooth and Nail.
Same company did Beast for the East, and they include Sleepless Night, Standing in Shadow. I think maybe there was one other song that wasn't on it as well.
I was mad because I remember they tried to re-release fucking the first two Badlands CDs with Ray Gillen, and like I was in high school at the time when they tried doing that, so I was broke as fuck, so I couldn't even afford them. And those, like, they put the shit can on those like immediately because all the bullshit legal stuff, which we'll talk about when we review Badlands in the future. I'm pissed about that.
But anyway, so Ryan was wrong about one of them, but it's all right. We love them.
we love you, Ryan.
I hate the song, but to me, like, there's a handful of songs from Back for the Attack that are much better songs that did not make our top 20. So I don't dislike, I don't hate the song, I just don't love it.
All right, fair enough. So what's next, Ryan?
All right, so we are now going on to number 14, and actually our first entry from Under Lock and Key. Johnny had it the highest at number 10, Lightning Strikes Again.
Yeah, I love this song. It's definitely, in my opinion, the most rock and metal song on the record. Short song, but, you know, great rocking song. And I love the way Don delivers the chorus. I mean, George's guitar is fire. I mean, it's a great song. Just love it, man. It's a rocker. And it's probably, you know, one of those songs where, you know, they kept that vibe from Tooth and Nail for me, you know. They kept that metal vibe, you know, on this song. And I love Under Lock and Key. It's a great record. I mean, probably, you know, it's hard. I go back and forth, but I would say my second favorite behind Tooth and Nail. Just the songwriting's great. And I love the way the record flows. I mean, it just flows perfectly for me. You know, the song sequence is perfect. And the way this fits in the middle of the record for, you know, a kick-ass metal song in the middle. I mean, to me, just perfect placement of the song.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, Lightning Strikes Again, man. That song kicks ass. And again, going back to my dad about, like, oh, Under Lock and Key is just a bunch of shitty ballads and love songs. And we were listening to Breaking the Chains. Yeah, you're telling me, Dad, you're telling me Lightning Strikes Again versus, like, Young Girls, really? Like, come on, Dad. I love you, Dad, but God damn it. Lightning Strikes Again, this song kicks ass, man. I love, like, you know, when Don screams lightning at the end, you know, like, he sounds like Klaus Meine, and, you know, no wonder fucking Scorpions were gonna hire him as their singer, you know, like, when they were unsure if Klaus could continue singing. I mean, he can do those, he has, like, that nasally kind of scream that Klaus does, and it's fucking amazing, and I love, like, you know, how heavy it is, but it's got the melodicness to it as well, the catchiness, you know, you know, when the, you know, it's like so heavy, but then when they do "When the Lightning Strikes Again," you hear like that guitar underneath, and it's just so like, you know, the guitar underneath is so light and airy and floaty, you know, or I can't even describe it, but like it's real melodic and beautiful, but like it's heavy at the same time. And I'll never forget too, like back in like 2011, it was right after high school, and I was enjoying my last summer vacation before I had to kind of get out there into the big boy like work world. I was watching the 2011 Stanley Cup, you know, playoffs, because I'm a hockey guy. You know, I'm a Canadian that was born in America, and I was watching. It was like Bruins and Lightning. It was Game 7. And it was overtime, and they were in Tampa Bay. And because they're the Lightning, they all of a sudden they're playing Lightning Strikes Again at the arena. It's like so awesome. Intense.
That's awesome.
I thought, man, that's fucking cool. I love it when they play like cool, like kind of deep cuts like that. Yeah. Because it pertains to a certain team, it's just, it's cool. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And I wanted the Lightning to win after that, because I was like, fuck yeah, like, you know, Lightning Strikes Again, they're playing Dokken. Sure enough, the Bruins ended up winning that game, but that was a fun playoff series. So yeah, I fucking love Lightning Strikes Again, man. That song kicks ass.
And you know, also, the gang vocals.
Yeah, the gang
vocals. Juxtaposed with Don screaming lightning, and then
yeah,
the band comes in with the gang vocals. I mean, that is just killer.
I love gang vocals, man. I love gang vocals.
Edward.
Right. I love this song. It's fucking awesome. And everything Eric and Johnny said about it, I totally spot on. Also, what Johnny was saying about Under Lock and Key overall, and obviously this is going to be an album we're going to talk about a few more times, but yeah, sequencing is amazing. I think both Tooth and Nail and Under Lock and Key both have perfect sequencing. They're perfect albums, you know. Tooth and Nail gets the edge for me because it has an edge that Under Lock and Key doesn't quite have. Under Lock and Key is a little more polished with its production. But if you're talking just the songs and not the production, they're very close. I mean, I would still maybe give Tooth and Nail and Edge, but I decided, I used to say it was Back for the Attack, but I decided when we were making this list, I told you guys about this, that I decided, no, it's Under Lock and Key, obviously, because I put more Under Lock and Key songs than Back for the Attack songs. And I say, well, I guess song for song, Under Lock and Key is my second favorite album because it had the second most songs. And I was like, damn, these are... Now, this album especially, I mean, we'll get more into it when we talk about some of the popular songs, but I think this was kind of the moment for Dokken where they could have played things differently and got more singles out of an album and did things differently. And because this was it. I mean, they were... This is like Def Leppard level pop metal perfection, and it didn't take them to where it should have. Like, this is the album that should have took them someplace. Like, Back for the Attack is technically their biggest selling album, but that's just wrong. It should be Under Lock and Key, and they obviously did a few things wrong, and I will have some opinions about that later. But anyway, but obviously this is a deep metal album track. This wasn't going to be one of the songs that was going to make it a hit, but it's the kind of song that would make cool headbangers say, yeah, Doc, it's not totally for ladies, this is cool music. It's metal, it's rocking, kind of like Don't Close Your Eyes on Tooth and Nail.
Yeah,
it has that same quality. I know me, Eric, and Johnny all think of the same thing, where it's like heavy, but then it has this melodic chorus, and you know, that's not something that a lot of bands could pull off. Mm-hmm. And so seamlessly, like, it just kind of seamlessly shifts tone, and it flows, and it's perfect. Like, I mean, they're so heavy in the verses, but then that chorus is like pure pop ear candy, and yet the momentum doesn't drop. It's not jarring. You know, this is just like total craftsmanship. It's amazing. And I just love the guitar work, the melodies, everything you guys said. It's a great song. When I saw George Lynch live last month, he played the song. It was the second song he played, and it was a great fun version. And when it was done, this was the song where George said, that's a really fun song to play.
who's he got on vocals for that?
On this one, it was some young... It's the guy who's currently singing for Great White.
Oh, that guy.
Some young blonde-haired guy.
He's a good singer, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
I looked on his Instagram, you know, to, like, hear what other stuff he does. Man, he's, like, very, like, diverse, man. He does some, like, insane, like, heavy metal with, like, some growly vocals, but then he can do shit like Great White and some hair metal. Like, he's very diverse, and he, like, can pull it all styles off. He's good.
He hit the original Don note from the album. Like, he hit it. Like, he sounded great. He did a really good job.
He's a great singer.
He did a really good job. I was surprised. He's young, too. He's just, like, in his, like, earlier mid-20s.
Oh, yeah, he's a pup.
Yeah, but, yeah, he did a good job. It was him. They alternated between him and the singer, an older singer from a band you like, Eric, XYZ.
Oh, I love Terry Lulis something like that. Yeah. I love XYZ.
He did a really good job, too. He sounded great.
Don Dokken produced their first album, and, like, if you listen to that album, it kind of sounds like a Dokken album. You should listen to it.
He did some work on it as well.
Yeah, honestly, Edwin, you'd probably like that first XYZ album. I like the first two, which is really honestly the only albums I believe they did.
Yeah, I'll check it. I was meaning to check them out, because I did like them a lot. Yeah, and he was a nice guy. I talked to him after the show. He was a really nice guy. Yeah. I liked him.
Best Nice Day to Die is a great fucking song. That's like the deep cut on the album. That's like a little bit heavier. That's a good song. Nice Day to Die by XYZ.
I'll check it out. But it was a great show. It was great. I was so thrilled that George played this. He opened with Kiss of Death, and then he went right into Light.
Nice.
Well, it was all Dokken songs. he played Wicked Sensation at the end, but that was it. It was pretty much all Dokken songs, and I was happy with that. Yeah, but yeah, it was a great 1-2 punch live, you know, opening up Kiss of Death and then going right into Lightning Strikes Again. It was a great show. But awesome song. What do you think about it, Ryan?
I love it. This song, probably more than any other on the album, could easily be on Tooth and Nail, but you definitely start to hear a little bit of that, you know, kind of evolution of his guitar tones. The guitar still rules. It's not as guttural. It's not as, like, dirty as the Tooth and Nail, but I like it. It kind of sets a new tone for the album, but this is heavy. I mean, this is as heavy as Dokken gets. It's a total metal song. Has that kind of same evil backing vocal I was talking about on When Heaven Comes Down. I kind of think those two songs are almost like cousin songs in a way. It's very Scorpions, too, to me. I hear a lot of Scorpions in their heavy stuff.
But Don cited them as a big influence.
No. Oh, no. Lynch, too. I mean, Lynch loves Scorpions.
Klaus Meine is a huge influence on Don. That's obvious.
Yeah, so, yeah. I guess, yeah.
So, two notes I had from things you guys said. Like, Edwin, it is interesting because, like, I think technically Back for the Attack sold more, but I would say 100%, having lived through it and being an MTV kid at that point, the videos for this album got much more play than the Back for the Attack does. It's Not Love and In My Dreams were played nonstop for like a couple months. I mean, they got good rotation on MTV. That was the height. That was when Dokken was the biggest.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where Back for the Attack was, it was because they built up a fan base with the last album.
And a lot of those kind of poppier fans did not like that album.
Yeah, it's also, it was like also, like I said, with the CD, it was like one of the first CDs when people started buying CDs. So I think all that stuff, and Dream Warriors, all that stuff kind of added to it. But yeah, I do remember, I thought, we'll talk more about this, but I do remember In My Dreams being on MTV, but that's also because my brother himself was calling it in a lot. Like, he
dial MTV at that point.
Yeah, my brother literally, him and his friend, I remember, they spent a whole day, they kept calling MTV over and over again, dialing it in.
But, like, yeah, It's Not Love and In My Dreams was on that for a long time. I mean, that it got good rotation. In the middle of the day, too, wasn't on at midnight. It was, like, middle of the day, those videos were getting played. But just my last couple things on this. I love this solo because it's very different. It's one of the first times George ever did this where it plays like a dueling guitar solo. It plays like a Priest solo. It plays like a Queensryche solo where he's answering himself. You know, it's double tracked, but it's a very cool solo because of that. And as far as I know, it might be the first time he ever did that. And last note to Eric, I am a huge hockey fan too. And you talk about the songs like, first of all, hockey plays metal all the time at their games.
I love it. Yeah.
And the Flyers this year, when they score, I live just outside of Philly, and I'm a huge Flyers fan. And when they score goals this year, their celebration song is this goes on the second the puck goes in the net is "Ain't Talking About Love," Van Halen.
Nice. I know. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs now also have Panama as their goal song. I think the Maple Leafs have Panama as their goal song now, and I think it's awesome.
Playing Sammy songs after goals.
Detroit Red Wings did that. That's another reason they hate the Detroit Red Wings. They play "I Can't Drive 55." It's like, man, fuck you.
But anyway, Dueling Lynch rules. Dueling Lynch guitar solo rules. I love Lightning Strikes. One of my favorites on that album. All right, so let's go to number 13, and this is one of their bigger songs. Johnny will lead us off on this one. He had it at number 11, the classic ballad, "Alone Again."
Man, I think this is one of the underrated ballads of the time. I mean, it's just a beautiful song, and also the riff that George plays over the chorus is so metal. I mean, it's such a metal riff over Don singing. And you never hear this song when you talk about great ballads of the time. This is one that people really don't mention. But it's a beautiful, beautiful song. Heavy. And Don sings it so good. And it's just a top-tier ballad for me. One of my favorites. And I just think it's totally underrated and not mentioned enough in that genre. Maybe it's because it's on this album that's so metal and so heavy and a little bit earlier in the genre, but man, is it a killer ballad. I mean, a top ballad of the decade for me.
Nice.
Right. Agree 100%, Johnny. I mean, this was honestly, for me, it was one of the first kind of power ballads that I remember like really loving. Like, and you know, I knew some power ballads from, like, earlier albums that, like, you know, I was turned on to way after those albums were recorded. But, like, they didn't sit the same way that, like, this was kind of the introduction to that true, like, kind of metal power ballad.
And this is really a power ballad. I mean,
really,
the riffage in this is heavy.
Yeah, and it gives you that perfect kind of, and Lynch does this brilliantly in a lot of Dokken songs, where he goes from that picking, very gentle melodic right to like a ripping fucking power chord and a ripping riff within that ballad.
And it's not sappy.
No,
it's moody. It's dark. It's brooding. It's
yeah. And man,
it's got those qualities.
This, all Dokken is pretty dark. They don't do a lot of bright, happy songs. But this is like one of Don's shining moments. Don was the main writer on this song. Lynch really just like took a very good ballad already and just punched it up a little bit with the leads he played. The solo is unbelievable. And again, a pretty minimalist solo. He doesn't play a ton of notes on that solo, but every note
suits the song perfectly.
Feeling. I love this song. I loved it from the first time I heard it. It did suffer a little bit of overplay to me, just because within my circle it was just a song that, you know, had been kind of beat into the ground a little bit. I'm sure that's a very small percentage of people that could say that they were in a circle to have like wear out on Dokken songs, but I was. But I absolutely love this song. I had it right where Johnny had it at 11, and let Eric take it. He had it at number 20.
Yeah, fucking Alone Again, man. It's like it's a badass like ballad, because it's not a cheesy sappy ballad. I mean, it's really dark and gloomy, you know. And it's like you do feel like you're like a guy like on the road with his band, and like your girl back at home just called and said, "Hey, I'm done with you," and like you're just driving around a beat up old tour bus in the rain, and you're just depressed and shit, and like just thinking about this girl and. You know, it's great. This is my favorite George Lynch solo. I think this is his best fucking solo he's ever done, ever, out of, like, anything. Not just in Dokken, but of all this stuff. I think it's his best fucking solo, and just, it tears right out. Just, I like how it just, like, pauses. It's quiet for, like, a second. And he just, like, rips right into it, man. Best solo George Lynch ever fucking did. It's a great fucking song. I fucking love it, and man, there's, like, a lot of, like, moody, dark, like, breakup songs by Dokken. Like, I remember, like, in middle school and, like, early high school, if I'd make, like, a mixed CD for a girl, I'd always, like, be like, okay, I gotta throw some Dokken on here. But then I'd look around, I'm like, man, these are all fucking breakup songs. I'm like, man, Don Dokken's just getting his heart broken. There's, like, no love song, you know? I'm like, I can't put any of this shit on here, you know? So Dokken was definitely, like, a band I listened to if I went through a breakup. But, like, there was, like, nothing on there about being in love or whatnot. But it's a great fucking song. I love Alone Again. It's a cool fucking ballad.
Don's not a happy guy. You know, you never see him. He's real happy and cheery.
Dude, I made the joke on the Back for the Attack episode that, like, Don's kind of like the metal version of, like, Taylor Swift. Every song is, like, a fucking breakup song. It's like, yeah, this man's getting his heart broken a lot, you know?
Even a song like Standing in the Shadows. I mean, it's not a ballad, but, I mean, there's nothing upbeat about
it. Yeah, I think, like, honestly, I've listened to so many Dokken songs. I think the only, like, song about, like, he finds a girl that he's in love with is, like, Burning Like a Flame. The rest are all like some bitch breaks his heart bad.
Well, that's funny that when you listen to Burning Like a Flame, I was like, who are you fooling, Don? This is going to be some demon woman that breaks your heart, and you know it, and you're going to be crying 1,000 years.
Like, he just met, like, the girl in Burning Like a Flame that he's singing about, he just met her on fucking Tinder, and like, okay, things are going good, and then she's going to stand him, like, he writes a song, but she's going to stand him up on the date. They're going to go on that first date, and she's not going to show up.
Yeah, let's see what you're saying in the next song, Don. Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, it didn't work out. Sorry, Don.
No wonder, like, George Lynch is such an asshole to Don Dokken. It's like, man, well, dude, the guy gets his heart broken a lot, okay? He's going to be a little moody. Like, give him a break. This man's dealt with some shit.
Edwin, you got anything on Alone Again?
Well, obviously, I love it. It didn't have it quite as high as you guys, but it did break my top 25. It's I would say it's my second favorite ballad by the band. It's a beautiful song. It's like everything Eric and Johnny have said about it. I would say one thing too, like, you know, and like Johnny was saying, it's like it's a really dark song. It's a ballad, but it's like a dark, moody ballad. It has atmosphere. Guitar work is amazing, as always, you know, and shows that George just plays for the song. Love the production's really good, has a lot of atmosphere to it. Don's singing, he's crooning, which, again, it doesn't get brought up a lot, but I hear in his own way a little Jim Morrison, even, especially when he
agree with you.
Yeah, especially when he does a song like this.
It has that, like, the Crystal Ship. It has a little bit of that After Hours crooning quality. And it's something that makes him a little different than all the other rock singers at that time period, you know? And especially in metal.
He had such a unique fucking voice. I remember someone saying, like, how, like, he's not that great of a singer. I never got into it. It's like, man, he just has such a unique voice, man. It's just like, dude, singing a Dawkins song is tough. Like, I remember trying, like, me and my band in high school, we were going to try and do, like, I forget what Dawkins song it was. We were going to try and do a cover song of a Dawkins song. And I'm just like, man, I just can't do this. It's just like, his voice is just so difficult to emulate. Like, the way he sings so softly, but, like, with so much power at the same time, it's so difficult to emulate.
Yeah, and I think also there wasn't a lot of power ballads at this time. This is before that. Yeah,
this is the primitive days.
Yeah, no,
this is pre Home Sweet Home.
It's even pre Home Sweet Home by a year, and yeah, it's kind of like they perfected the power ballad before it even became a thing. Yeah. You know, the only group that would maybe come close, arguably, is like Guns N' Roses a few years later, where they were able to do power ballads that still had some meat to them, or darkness, like Sweet Child of Mine or Estranged.
But I'd say this
it
was the closest to in that time period, just a couple years earlier. Like, Scorpions had some songs that were bordering on that, you know, like Still Loving You and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
that was the closest it is at that time. Yeah,
fans had power ballads before Home Sweet Home, but, like, before Home Sweet Home, they weren't, like, a requirement. Like, after Home Sweet Home, it was a requirement. Like, you had to have one.
No doubt.
And that's where it's, like, that's where it started sounding forced.
And I lived through it. That was literally a defining moment in, like, kind of the product of a metal band from that point forward. It was, like, a absolute, like, line, like, that's where it started, right there. And it was like every band had to have a, and I actually appreciated the few bands that didn't fall into that, like Rat, I love, because they never did that power ballad. Van Halen never did the power ballad. Like,
AC/DC never did one. A few bands never resort, but most did. But that's the thing, is Dawkins did this before it was a requirement.
That song was coming from a real place.
And yes. Don's the kind of guy, he could write a power ballad really good naturally. Like, this is a guy that's not writing it because he's like, oh, fuck, we need one for the album. He's doing it because it's just like, this is just what he's best at writing.
Don has... in a shitty mood, miserable
Don,
and fucking writes
a song. Stephen Winters breaking his heart.
Misery.
Yeah. And, it's from a genuine place. It's a real... It's one of the great ballads. Like, it's one of those songs, like... I didn't have it too high on my list, but it had to be on the list. And when I think about it, it's one of the greatest power ballads from the 80s. It's an amazing song. God damn, what a fucking awesome band is Dawkins. Let's see. What's next, Ryan?
And you had mentioned something on the production. I just have to throw in, at some point I was going to talk about Tom Warman. Tom Warman is just like the most interesting producer ever to me. I mean, this guy... He produced some of my favorite albums of all time. I mean, you know, starting with Tooth and Nail, but then he did Dream Police, Heaven Tonight, In Color. You know, Cheap Trick's one of my favorite.
Amazing stuff. All their best albums.
He did Shout of the Devil. He did Stay Hungry. He did Kix albums. He did Ted Nugent. He did L.A. Guns. But, like, without fail, the bands that he had the most successful albums with, they hate him and say they hated his production. And it's so weird to me because, like,
it is.
These albums are like the albums I grew up in. So I, like, you know, and I'm not saying it's any, like, brilliant production. But I just love the way those albums sound. Maybe it's just the sentimentality of, like, that's what I grew up on or whatever. I don't know. But man, like, Alone Again, that the production of that song, I think it's awesome. It sounds amazing to this day. I think it still sounds fresh today. I don't think it sounds like dated. I think it sounds great.
I think Tooth and Nail is their best sounding album overall. Yes, I think it's that perfect balance.
It's the best production wise sounding for me. Like,
yeah. My only issue with Factory Attack, it does sound great, but why I would give Tooth and Nail an edge, it's a little treble heavy. It doesn't have the low end.
There is no bass at all.
Back for the Attack just suffers from too clean, too polished production, and it's just like the CD age, so it's just ridiculously too long.
It's a little, but I'm talking just about the sound. The sound's a
oh,
little.
Oh, yeah, I agree with the
it's
sound.
A little too treble, and it's also a little too compressed sounding.
Yes.
I
finally found a good copy for a decent price. I was so excited to get that on vinyl, and I brought it home. And I'm still very happy I have it because it's an original pressing and everything. But god damn, is the sound on that album, especially on vinyl, it's just thin. There's no bend at all.
Well, yeah, there's so many songs on it, though. that would make sense that they couldn't get, because, you know, the more songs, the less grooves you have for bass.
And you know, the other thing is, by that time, vinyl was selling so little that like they weren't even taking time doing vinyl pressings. They were just like chalking them and getting them out of there.
They're shitting them out.
There was no art to that anymore. Like in the 70s and early 80s, like there was a competition amongst like the different record pressing places where they took like pride in like the quality of that pressing. By 1987, people didn't give a shit. They weren't selling vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, Ryan, what's the next song on this list?
All right, we go right back to Johnny. This is the third one in a row where Johnny had it the highest, and it's a song. So we've already touched on a little bit in the second one from Under Lock and Key, a big single, and actually on MTV, like I said, got a lot of airplay with that like very just kind of simple video of them being on the back of a truck driving down the Sunset Strip. I would say maybe the second, third biggest hit they ever had. It's Not Love.
Man, what a great song. What a great song, and it's another one that I just can't believe that it wasn't more of a hit. I mean, it's so great. The riff is unbelievable, so catchy, and you know, the chorus, you know, the why, baby, why, you know, it's just great. The video, simple. I mean, I think freaking Jackal redid some type of similar video a couple years later that was equally ridiculous, but just them driving around in the truck. I mean, it's just another example of, I feel like they just could have done a little bit more with that to make it have some type of crossover appeal, you know, at the time. But as far as the song goes, man, what a great song. What a great, great song. It has hits all the boxes for a perfect like crossover, like pop hit. It just should have been a bigger hit than it was. But everything about it is perfect, perfect song for me. The riff, the vocals, George's playing is just gnarly on it. But it still has that accessibility to where, like, you know, anybody could get into this song who was a fan of music at that time.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Eric, you had a pretty high too.
Yeah.
Number six, go ahead.
Man, I fucking love this damn song. Like, there's just, I go through spells like so much where I just like, I listen to the song on repeat nonstop. I mean, it reminds me of fucking like a lot of like high school, man. I mean, there's no, I don't think there's any two bands I listen to more in sophomore and junior year than fucking Rat and Dokken. Like, those are just two bands I was just playing nonstop, you know, my sophomore and junior year of high school. And this is just one of those songs.
I still played them nonstop at 43.
Oh, me too. But, like, god damn, though. It's like, this song is just, it's perfect, man. Like, I think this is probably one of Don's best vocal performance in a song. I think it's seriously his best vocal performance. Just, like, the way he sings it, some of the notes he hits, it's just fucking phenomenal. And I remember the music video, because my dad, like I said, my dad had the VHS of Unchained the Night, where it had, like, all the videos and shit, and it had, like, the funny, like, you know, goofy, like, stuff with, like, George Lynch with the fucking guitar case doing all the tricks and shit. I had it on DVD for a while, and sadly, that was one of those DVDs I had to get rid of just, you know, when I was going through some rough times. I gotta get that. I gotta get that DVD again. But, man, I love the video. I thought the video was really good. You know, I love them on the truck, and, like, there's the weird dancing homeless guy at the beginning, which is like, what the fuck is that? I love, too, like, when they do the chorus, It's Not Love, and they show all the different people. Like, they have the Laker girls, and there's, like, one where they have, like, a black guy with a saxophone. One of the cool things, too, I love, and it just really takes me back, is when they're driving in front of Tower Records. Because, man, I miss fucking Tower Records. There was a...
Hell yeah.
I grew up in Illinois. You know, I'm in Indiana, but I grew up in Illinois for pretty much my whole life, and we had Tower Records in Schaumburg, And that was one of my favorite places to go, man. It was Tower Records, and there's an import store called Record Breakers that I'd go to constantly with my dad. And, I mean, that's where I found a lot of these, like, cool metal albums. I'd see videos on Metal Mania and, you know, of all these obscure bands, you know, like Accept, Michael Schenker, and stuff. And the only place I could, the only place I could find those albums for those bands was, like, you know, Tower Records and Record Breakers. You know, if I went to Best Buy or, like, Walmart or some shit, they just have the greatest hits. You know, if I wanted to find, like the actual, like, you know, like, the album, like, the albums of these obscure bands, or even, like, the, you know, just, like, actual albums of, like, bands I like, you know, I had to go to Tower Records or, like, fucking Record Breakers. So it's just, seeing Tower Records in that video just brings back so many great memories of picking up new albums from all these cool bands I was discovering. And, but yeah, it's just a great fucking song, man. I fucking love it. And I think the video's really fucking cool. I'm surprised it never, like, got them bigger, because I think it's a simple video, but it's a really cool concept. And I fucking love it, man. I love It's Not Love. Great fucking perfect song.
Edwin, you had it at number 22.
Okay, 22. Strong 22. Love this song. A lot of things to talk about this one, because now we're going to get into the larger discussion of why Under Lock and Key was not, like, as big as Pyromania. Okay. Okay, because I think it had the goods. It had the songs.
I think it's a better record than Pyromania, personally. I prefer.
They're close. They're very, very close. It's hard for me to say. I think it's as good. I will say there's two things. Mutt Lange's production stronger on Pyromania. Mutt Lange's, it's a little punchier.
Oh, yeah, easily.
But, the songs are damn strong here. And definitely, I mean, this should be, like, wiping the floor of what Rat and Motley Crue were doing in the mid-80s, in my opinion. So, you know, short of Pyromania, this should be, like, the second biggest pop metal album from the mid-80s, in my opinion. It has some songs, and this is one of them. This should have been a big hit. I don't think it's the video so much. I lean a little more towards Eric on this one. I think it's actually one of their better videos. It's fun. It's fun mm-hmm. seeing all the people in the streets. When you think
I
about
love it. Topic,
think about U2 just a couple years later. Streets Have No Name. It's kind of a similar thing. They're just like on top of a building. There's people watching.
I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't like so amazing as a concept. but the difference is, by that point, they were coming off of, like, two really big singles, and, like, that was the third, like, video. This was, likewise, the third video. I think it should have been the fourth video. I think this should have had four singles. Two songs that weren't even released from the album I thought should have been singles, and one that was, even though I love it, I don't think should have been a single. And so we'll get more into this as we get to maybe some of these songs.
I forgot to mention too. This I love the cheesy fucking phone call part.
Oh, I love that.
That's great.
Phone call. Thought, Eric. That's part of my review of this.
Okay, we'll let Ryan talk about call. Yeah. But let me get back to the success. And now Jeff Pilson has said in interviews he thinks this should have been the lead off single. I agree. I kind of half agree. I agree. It's a better choice than what they did. I still think there's another song that they didn't even release that should have been the lead-off single, which we may or may not talk about. It's complicated Under Lock and Key. There's a lot of potential with this fucking album. But anyway, this song, I think it's a great, like, last video song to release as a third or fourth video after you've already kind of built up the enthusiasm of the band, and they've already had a couple hits, and now you give them this anthem where we all sing along to, you know. And I don't think it was a mistake to make it one of the later singles. I think the biggest mistake was what they chose as the first single and neglecting this other song that I think would have been the best way to introduce the MTV crowd to Dokken, kind of reintroduce them. So it's complicated, but we'll get to this, because both of these songs will be discussed, maybe. But anyway, but this is a great song. Yeah, it should have been a bigger hit. It's a lot of fun live. Love the finger tapping. I think Standing in Shadows is even better. But this is a poppier song that, yeah, this should have been huge. And I love it. And I think it could have been like the second biggest song from the album if released strategically a certain way. And yeah, it's a great song. It's great. I'm not going to talk about the phone call. I'm going to leave that. But that phone call is awesome. It's kind of stupid, but it's awesome and it's stupidity. But anyway, so Ryan, you take it.
All right. So I did not have this in my top 25. And it's not because I don't like it. I mean, it'd be probably.
You don't like finger tapping. Is that the thing?
Yeah, what the hell, man?
It's been like 26 or 27. I mean, I like the song. Okay. But again, it's a little like it's funny, and this all comes down to age. I'm the old geezer of the four of us. To me, this was because I'm telling you guys, when this song came out, it was on MTV all the time. It was like one of the few Dokken songs that suffered a little burnout for me because it was played so much. And this and In My Dreams, those two videos, and I'm not, again, not at midnight on a metal show. Those two songs were on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on MTV every day for like a good 2-3 weeks.
In My Dream should still be on every day on some cable networks.
And maybe the thing is they were on MTV more than the actual radio. That's the thing. Whereas, I'll say this. I remember as a child hearing Def Leppard on the radio all the time. I don't ever remember hearing Dokken unless my brother was playing it from his ghetto blaster.
Edwin, you hit the nail on the head, and that's something I didn't realize till I was an adult, because me and my brother didn't listen to much radio. We watched MTV, bought albums, and just immersed ourselves in albums. But at that time, most of our kind of gateway to get new bands was MTV.
Yeah, MTV was huge.
So, and there was definitely an element of certain bands that got a lot of play on MTV, but didn't necessarily cross over to radio. And that's where, like, Dokken sat in that kind of, like, ravine there, where, like...
They still sit there.
The MTV play and did very well on MTV, but they never got the crossover to radio. Like, for some reason, these songs that got all this play on MTV did not get the radio play. And that was the difference. That's why they kind of stalled at a million, you know, tooth and nail, a million copies plus.
And they still haven't really hit classic rock radio as far as the other bands of the 80s.
Never did.
Rat, you hear a couple of their biggest hits on the radio. Yeah. They're classics. Yeah. You know, and of course, a lot of the other bands. But Dokken, you will never... You have to listen to some kind of deep metal show on, like
the metal station. XM, like hair metal.
Yeah, exactly.
The Boneyard, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the real difference. And they were right on that brink, but for some reason they just never clicked to that next level where you got that crossover radio play. But on MTV, they were getting a lot of love. They really were. But just getting into this song a little bit more, I love it. But again, it suffers from a little bit of wear on me. And again, I make fun of Don's brooding. There's a lot of brooding on this song with Don. And the phone call is just absurd. I mean, you can't have me. Well, maybe just tonight.
And he changes his mind so fast. He's like, well, maybe just tonight. Wait a minute. No, you can't have me.
So stupid. But whatever. I mean, it doesn't ruin the song for me. I still love the song. And, like, you know, the tapping is cool. I think that's a, like, really kind of... newer kind of riff at that time. And also another thing I love about this, like we talked about a little bit, like the production of these albums, the only time you can hear the bass on songs is when like George is doing some kind of picking or lower. Mm. Like anytime he's playing power riffs, you can't hear the bass at all.
Yeah.
The only time you hear bass is when there's like an interlude in a song or like a little different kind of riff he's playing. And this song is a very good example. The bass at the beginning of the song is awesome. And I mean, it's one of the few times you can hear Pilsen, but the bass is great on this. I mean, there's a lot of cool shit on this song. The riff is very cool. I actually really liked the video. I mean, I think it was a fun video and it's played a good amount. And the bridge, like right before the solo, is awesome. That's the best part of the song to me. It's like a build up and like very catchy and melodic. Don does a great job there. Great song. Even though I didn't have it in my top 25, but that tells you how much I like Dokken.
Right on.
All right, moving on to number 11 from Tooth and Nail, the third entry from Tooth and Nail, and Edwin's going to start this off, had it very high at number 7, Don't Close Your Eyes.
God damn, this song is great. I love this song. it's to me, it's even better than when Lightning Strikes Again, but kind of similar. It's a heavy song. It starts off really heavy, has that driving riff. It's like really rocking, but then that fucking chorus, the Don't Close Your Eyes chorus, it's like total fucking pop metal pageantry. And Don, I think Don really shines, you know, at that point, the way he sang, and he just like, and just the whoa, it's just like ear candy. You're listening to this thing. This is so heavy and poppy at the same fucking time. Sometimes Judas Priest during this period could do that too. You know, during the like Screaming for Vengeance Defenders period. Where they would have a really heavy like verse, but then a really poppy kind of anthemic chorus. And Dokken totally pulls it off. There's just something really magical about the song. It's amazing. I mean, it's an album track for sure, but it's like one of those things that this is what the difference between a band that, you know, has some hits and a band that makes albums and has solid albums, and it like they have a song like this. Don't close your eyes. Like, you know, I'm thinking again. I don't want to be like a bashing Crew, and I know Johnny loves the Crew. Listen, I love the first two albums, and I do like Theater of Pain. But Theater of Pain, like when you start getting to just the album tracks, there's some good songs, but you don't get shit like this.
I totally agree with you, 100%.
Yeah, I mean this is top shelf material. Yes. for an album track, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. So hey Johnny, what you want to go next?
Yeah, I mean it's a great track. I mean, and George really shines on it for me. I mean, just so heavy, and Don's great. It fits in perfectly with the album. I mean, it's just highlights tooth and nail, like such a great metal album of that period. And I like everything about the song, and I just think it's perfectly placed on the album. And I actually got all from Breaking the Chains up from Beast in the East. I bought all the Dokken vinyls from one person for a very, very reasonable deal, and they're all in perfect condition. And I just love all those records, so I was really lucky to get all of those. But you know, this is a great, great classic Dokken song, and the whole album, Tooth and Nail. I just can't say enough about, you know, what a perfect, perfect record that is. And I do totally agree with you with Motley Crue, and it took me a while to, you know, go back and really appreciate how great Dokken was and is, you know, for that time period, because, you know, it's totally true. Like, the quality of the song, the musicianship, the lyrics, it's not comparable. I mean, some of the early Crew gets that, you know, rawness, and they did hit it out of the park with a lot of their music videos and singles, which Dokken didn't. But
I agree with that. When videos wipe the floor of Dokken videos.
Yeah, but when it comes to these album tracks, I mean, it's not even a comparison. The lyrical imagery that Dokken has, and the musicianship, and George's tone and melodic guitar on this song, and the ability for him to switch from, you know, playing such intricate melodies into heavy riffs. I mean, it just great song on a great record.
Well said.
Love it. So I will do this. Eric, no, Eric, you take it next. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Don't Close Your Eyes, man. That song kicks ass. Probably one of the best deep cuts on Tooth and Nail, except for another song that was on my list. I don't know if it made it on the actual top 25, but this is probably my second favorite deep cut on Tooth and Nail. I fucking love Don't Close Your Eyes, man. It's rules, man. Just a real kick-ass metal song, man. Real fast and furious. Fucking melts your fucking face off, man. There's really nothing else I can add to it that you guys haven't added to it already. Fucking rules, man.
Nice. All right, I'll take it last. Yeah, I mean, this is metal Dokken. This is just a straight-up metal song. We talked a little bit earlier about Rock Candy, but actually, while you guys were talking, I went over and just grabbed the CD. I'd gotten the Tooth and Nail remaster of this, and it's really good. And I think the biggest thing I like about it, I mean, I'm not going to make it like this is like a, you know, like a Giles Martin, like Beatles remaster. It's not like, I don't think they could, they even have the capability of like remastering in that fashion, but they did at least like kind of bring the bass up a little bit in this mix that I have, and it definitely just has a little bit more of a loudness factor. One of the frustrations of those like mid-80s or especially like 83, 84 CDs is like, God, there's like when you compare them to everything else you have on your like iPod or your phone or whatever, they're so low. And like the original Tooth and Nail, compared to everything else, when I'm listening to a shuffle, it just always sounds so weak. So those Rock Candy remixes really like punch those albums up a little bit. And again, you can hear the bass a little bit. And on this song in general, even with the original mix, you can hear bass because it's got that rumbling part in the first part, which is really cool. I love the hi-hat count in right into that opening riff, like the and then right into the riff. Really cool. Just a, you know, a great, great, great early 80s metal song. And, you know, Dokken teetered that, you know, balance between metal and pop and melodic, and that's what's great about him. But this song is this great metal song, and I fucking love it. I had it at a number 23, and I had the lowest of the four of us. Edwin had it at 7, Johnny had it at 13, Eric had it at 14, and that's why it came as high as it did at 11.
Alright everyone, we're going to go ahead and end the episode right there. I hope you enjoyed the first half of Dokken Around the Christmas Tree. Come back next week and we'll be back with part 2 with our top 10 favorite Dokken songs. So stay tuned. Go ahead and follow us on Facebook, subscribe, leave us a review, and check out more of our episodes. We love you, and good night.